All right, Judah, are we live?
Yeah.
Okay, we're live.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Coffee.
Let me know how I can help you. Would you like me to do anything to help you?
Thank you.
Wow.
Just keep me honest. Keep make sure that I'm not screwing up.
It's expensive.
Yeah, I Starbucks. Terry, where's the green, yellow, red buttons for speakers? Okay, so we do. All right.
Good evening. I'm calling to order this meeting of the Planning Commission for May 24th, 2017. My name is John Davidos. I serve as the chair. This evening, we have all commissioners present, and we believe our liaison, the mayor, will be joining us as well very shortly. Do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes, so we have the agenda approved. The first topic we have is City Council communications. Given the mayor is still yet to be here, we'll defer that one. Moving on, do we have any community council presentations or updates? Any other boards and commissions? All right, I'll keep moving on then. Mr. Cullen, over to you for the staff update then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is no staff update for this meeting.
All right. We are moving on really fast this evening. Thank you. So first up, we have public comment. Thank you for signing up. We do have a number of folks this evening. So we will do a couple of things. Firstly, we will restrict the public comment time to 3 minutes per individual, just so we can get to the deliberations and closing of this particular item. And secondly, we'll try to address half of the sign-ups in front and then have the second half at the end of the session. For those folks who might not know, we have public comment at the beginning as well as at the closing of the session. And I'll do my best to make sure we have a good combination of people for and obviously against in terms of various topics. Just one topic of I guess the agenda. You'll see a light over on to your left-hand side. The green indicator is your start. The yellow is basically giving you a heads up that you're close to your time limit. And I would request that as it turns red, please, if you would just quickly wrap up so we can get to the other folks in terms of their own items on the agenda. So with that, first up we have Mr. Richard Gary.
Good evening.
Yes, please. And if you'd give us your name and address, please.
Yes, my name is Richard Gary. My wife and I reside in Bellevue Towers at 10,700 Northeast 4th Street. We are familiar with the Planning Commission's efforts, now in its fifth year, to develop land use code amendments to implement the Downtown Livability Initiative. This effort is now in its fifth year. But despite the passage of time, we urge the Commission and will urge the City Council, if necessary, to defer adoption of any land use code changes until the Lincoln Center, the Lincoln Tower expansion and Center 425 projects are fully occupied and their impact on downtown traffic and safety measured. Together, these projects comprise almost 2 million square feet of leasable space with 3,000 parking stalls new to downtown Bellevue. They will bring thousands of new users into the area. Like the proposed code amendments, they will result in added density and congestion and will have a profound impact on livability. It is both unwise and unnecessary to act until all the facts that can possibly be known are known. There is an additional reason to defer action. The terms of three City Council members expire at year end. One such council member, Kevin Wallace, the president and COO of Wallace Properties, has announced he will not seek re-election. The two other such members have said they will be on the ballot. The impact of changes to the code will be both substantial and permanent. We believe that adoption of changes should be deferred to 2018 when a new council with a longer-term outlook and without the presence of a member with conflicted interests will be seated, and after an election where voters who care deeply about these issues will have had an opportunity to be heard. I would make one more point. We feel that the livability initiative process has been heavily weighted in favor of developers since inception. Nothing illustrates this better than the Commission's actions on May 10th. When Commissioner Lang, a partner at the law firm that represents Wallace Properties, proposed that numerous land use code modifications set forth in a letter dated April 26th from Wallace as supplemented May 10th be incorporated directly into the amendments without discussion. Commissioner Lang said that if we go through these changes in a linear fashion, we'll never get to closure. The Commission adopted the motion with only Commissioner Morisseau dissenting. I must say that I found that action to be an insult to the residents of downtown Bellevue. Many others did as well. It confirmed the suspicions of bias and self-interest that many downtown residents hold. Thank you.
Thank you.
And the light needs to be fixed, I think.
We are working on it.
It's fixed.
I have a copy of my remarks if there's a place to...
Yes, leave. I'll take it. Thank you.
Mr. Bill Herman, please.
Just plug it in.
Oh, yes, let me do that for you.
All right, what I was going to show was just a traffic on Bellevue Way. Oh, my name's Bill Herman, 10700 Northeast 4th Street, live at Bellevue Towers. What I was going to show was a video. I just went for a bike ride Friday, 3 o'clock, and just was going to show that the whole Bellevue Way was not moving one inch the whole length, all the way up to Main Street, all the way up to 4th. Well, once it got up to 4th, it kind of started to clear out. But the whole length, all the way down to I-90. And this is 3 o'clock on just a random Friday that it just happened to be out. So what I wanted to talk about was traffic, and that we need to look at the facts on traffic. What we've been told by the Transportation Commission is that traffic hasn't changed in 20 years. All trips downtown, added trips to downtown, have been absorbed by public transit, and that it's not a problem, and that it's not going to be a problem. What we experience is like this Bellevue Way. It's just totally broken. And we still have half the city to build out under the existing code. So the 2013 transportation study calls for another 200,000 cars per day, given the infrastructure we've got. That study didn't account for the upzone. The upzone is going to be it's about a 50% density increase. So this number is based on the draft land use audit on page 7 tells us that only 78% of available FAR up to this point has been used. So that means if you just increase height, that's a 28% increase in FAR right there. On top of this, we know that in OLB and the MU, we're going to have a doubling in FAR. We've got the 1.0 affordable housing exemption that's everywhere. The residential FAR in the 01 is going to be set at 10. If you add one for the affordable housing and you add another one for the retail exemption, that's a FAR of 12. Compare this to the Lincoln expansion. When you look at its proposal, it is weighs in at 6.5. So we're talking something twice the size in that space. Where are we going to put all these cars? So what we need is, before we act, we have to know that we're not going to do something that once we act, it's irreversible, and we don't want to do something that we're going to regret. So there should at least be a study that, what are we going to do with not only these 200,000 cars, but the extra 100,000 that comes from the upzone? And in my opinion, the methods for the traffic studies that don't account for trip time, they only account for volume, and so they're broken. So they really, like the CCR, the corridor capacity report, showed a drop in volume, but a 46% increase in trip time in 2 years. This is going to happen to our streets as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Mr. Phil McBride, please.
Hi, we're talking jointly this evening. My name is Andrew Miller. I represent BDR. We own the property at 11100 Main Street.
Yeah. And Phil McBride, we're at the property at 11040 Main Street, and we just wanted to come back and have a few words.
Not as easy as last time. Sorry. And I just brought this as a quick reminder of what we were talking about. We wanted to report back that a few months ago you had sent us to discuss with staff how we could maybe make reality out of something that was really responsive design to an interesting corner of downtown. Staff did take your direction about the East Main area and looked at the properties facing Main Street. And as you probably would expect, staff had a kind of a different way to look at it because they have different influences that they need to take into consideration. But having the opportunity to discuss it with them and looking at how they approached it, we wanted to come back and let you know that we concur with what is in the code. It gets to this type of project a little bit differently. It is reliant on getting a 1 FAR bump for affordable housing, but we are okay with that concept. And we think that's a good direction. And I just wanted to say, in wrapping up my comments, that I think about what it could have been on that site, which is Ballard boxes or some other projects around Bellevue that probably could have been something better or more special. And I'm very happy that Planning Commission, some city council members, and the city staff all looked at this and said, you know, there's a unique opportunity here to do something better for the city of Bellevue, and I'm very excited that we were a part of that.
Great. So we've been here many times, and we've worked individually with the staff, and so we just wanted to take a minute to come full circle, complete the loop, and again, thank you. We've got there's a project here that's good for the city of Bellevue. I think everyone could see it, and I just want to let you know how much we appreciate staff having the patience to listen to us and go through all of this. So thank you all very much. We're excited about it. And, you know, like anything, you don't get everything you want, but it's something that I think is good for the city of Bellevue, certainly good for light rail and taking advantage of the investment that SoundTrans is putting into this station here. So very good. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Mr. Don Rich up next, please.
My name's Don Rich. I live at 10700 Northeast 4th Street in Bellevue. And I moved up from Silicon Valley 6 years ago. I lived in San Francisco and downtown high-rise. I've had that experience of understanding the value of the view and the aesthetics of high-rise living. And I learned a lot from that experience. So I was impressed. I came up to Bellevue for business. I was impressed with the design and the plan for the wedding cake concept and the zoning associated with that. So I used that information, which I thought was very good, to make my decision. And I purchased in Bellevue Towers on the south side of the downtown 01 district and high above what I thought would be any future development, understanding that across the street they could go up to 250 feet. So last year, then about this time of the year, maybe a little bit sooner, the FANA group presented to Bellevue Towers, which I thought was very good, their plan. And, of course, I'm aware of the livability study. I've attended some of the meetings. By the way, this is the first time I've ever spoken to any form of city council, and I felt like compelled to come forward. And I've been part of the group at Bellevue Towers attending and trying to be aware. So a FANA group presented, and, you know, there was with the amenities, it appeared that they were going up 300 feet. We expressed some concerns about the light and so forth, but assumed that that was the deal, and I thought it was a done deal. I understand that they've come back and asked for more height, and I don't know what the situation is. It's hard to really understand what the height limit is. I've tried to understand that in reading a lot of the documents and the some of the designs of the FANA group building. But I'm here to encourage the group to hold the line on the wedding cake design. I thought that was very, very good. It offered integrity and some understanding for future development, not only for the residents but for the developers. So I felt that if it was good enough back a year ago, economically for the FANA group, they ought to hold the line on that as compared to coming back and trying to increase. I'm sure there's a profit motive there. If you can go up higher, it increases the value of their property and the profit. So I like the wedding cake design. I hope that the Planning Commission and the City Council and the powers to be can hold the line and not let the wedding cake bleed over to other areas, and so that the residents don't have to eat cake. So I don't know whether I'm naive or whether our we're all wasting our time, but I thought I'd voice my opinion. I hope not. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Mike LaTorre, next, please.
My name is Mike LaTorre. I reside at 500 106th Avenue Northeast at Bellevue Towers. It's approaching crunch time in presenting your recommendations to the City Council, so it'd be useless to readdress any specific codes. What I would like to do is summarize what many of the downtown residents feel of the process taken so far. The results today of the land use code update has become so convoluted and complex, I know that no one here, including many of you, know what to expect if all these amendments are approved. Through this process, the residential community's input seems to have had little effect or has been overshadowed by the commercial developers. There also has been concern of questionable participation with the City Council and the Planning Commission, with specific members having strong ties with the commercial development. The Citizen Advisory Committee did not have one member who lived in the downtown area. It does not make many of us living downtown comfortable that our interests are being taken into consideration. Much input has been offered by residents, but when or if considered, have been outweighed by the commercial perspective to enhance building. The proof of the statement is in the size and complexity of those proposed amendments. The codes have so many varied and undefined or unclear interpretations, along with a flawed amenity incentive program with no follow-up or accountability built into any of the amendments that would conclude the developer met their commitment to the community. We are aware that the mayor and the City Council are expecting your recommendations. If they go forth as drafted, it is only going to confuse everyone on what is going to be allowed in the future and with the potential of the community be taken advantage of. In summary, the objectives of the Downtown Livability Initiative was better achieve the vision for downtown as a vibrant mixed-use center, enhance the pedestrian environment, improve the area as a residential setting. Hopefully, the Planning Commission will be presenting to the City Council a very clear summary specific to how they're going to meet those objectives with these amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. If I don't pronounce your name right, please, my apologies in advance. Mr. Lance Ramsey, up next.
That was great.
Thank you. Because I got that one right.
Yes. Lance Ramsey, 500 106th Avenue, Northeast, Bellevue, Washington, which is Bellevue Towers. And we've lived in Bellevue Towers about 4 years. And I guess this should be an exciting thing for the downtown residents. I don't think anybody here is anti-development, but it does feel bad. It feels like the process hasn't represented equally the interests of the residents. And I think that's really what people are looking for, is that it's appropriate due diligence, and it's a thoughtful process, and it feels like it hasn't been that. Taking away any sort of intent around that, I think it's a difficult and challenging process that you folks are going through. And I have to say that we feel that the board, there are folks on the board that have done a really good job, that really don't have a horse in the race, that don't have what might be a perceived conflict of interest, that have really stood up for us. So first of all, appreciate that. Livability. The first thing that struck us was the livability aspect of it, the fact that it was branded that. It seemed like it was all about increasing upzoning and increasing catering to the interests of the developers versus really the residents and the livability. Things like parking and congestion. The parks people were in here a few weeks ago or a few meetings ago. A lot of stuff that would be normally considered livability just seemed to have been kind of kicked down the road. And at a minimum, I think that should be considered at the same time. And I know that's come up in many meetings. And then the whole transparency issue, again, taking intent out of it, it clearly has not been, it's been really hard to track. And maybe it's due to the time that's elapsed, the fact that most of us have jobs or other things going on, and we understand that the people representing the developers, this is their job, so they've got to show up here in suits, and you know they're well represented, and we don't always feel like we are. So I guess the to conclude, really kind of agreeing with all my fellow residents who've already come up, say, pause the process. This is a city in motion. There's already a bunch of changes that we don't even know the impact of, and believe it's irresponsible, actually, not to assess what's the changes that are already occurring before making decisions that, again, could further impact that or exacerbate it if it's a problem. So we're hoping that we'll be able to create a pause here and do some due diligence and make sure that there's a good public discussion around it. And I think that we can all be proud then of the outcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Jackie Ramsey up next, please.
Good evening. I wanted to call attention to the concerns of the residents of downtown Bellevue. For 4 years, we've been voicing our concerns.
Excuse me, ma'am. Could you state your name and address for the record?
I'm sorry. Jackie Ramsey, 500 106th Ave, Northeast, Bellevue, Washington. For 4 years, we've been voicing our concerns regarding livability in person and in writing. The appearance of the numerous signs here tonight is meant to call attention to the fact that we know our concerns and interests are being subsumed by the attention and activity of people who lobby you for a living, none of whom actually live downtown and deal with the results of their decisions. It's disturbing to watch the requests of a single developer become immediately incorporated into recommendations while ours are routinely swept aside. And when Lance talked about it doesn't feel good, it doesn't feel good to the residents, the people that live down here. We're not anti-development, but we're not for development at any cost. We urge the Planning Commission and the City Council better understand the infrastructure, safety, and traffic impacts of the recommendations before you proceed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. George Hatoon, next, please.
Hi, good evening. My name is George Hatoon. I live at 10700 Northeast 4th Street in Bellevue. I have been a resident and a homeowner in Bellevue for about 20 years. And we've worked in Bellevue downtown for the last 10 years. There are many things I love about Bellevue. I love that I can walk to work. I love being able to go to the park and the grocery store. And overall, compared to 20 years ago, this is a much better place. This is a lot more to do, better entertainment options, restaurants. So just to be clear, I'm not against development, and I want to see more healthy development in Bellevue going forward. So the reason why I'm here is I recently purchased a condo a few months ago in Bellevue Towers. In that process, I talked to a real estate agent. I went to the planning department at City Hall. I read the current land use rules. I read the preliminary livability report. And as a result, I still didn't get a very accurate picture of what the true height restrictions were, what the density was going to be, what the shape of the buildings were going to be like, whether they're going to be tall and skinny or tall and fat, or whether it would really be following the wedding cake design. It just, I mean, even as somebody who works in a fairly technical field and used to reading a lot of technical documents, you know, it's very difficult to parse, you know, documents like this and really understand kind of what exactly is going on. So I do appreciate all the good work that was done on the downtown livability study. I have a couple of suggestions to make before approving the study. The first is to revise the report to be a little bit more transparent and more clear about what the actual maximum height and density is for each of the zones, including any, you know, amenities or mechanical screening and so forth. There seems there's still a lot of room for interpretation in that, and I think it would just be better if it was just stated very explicitly so that people could understand. And I think if there's transparency and understanding, the people can make decisions with their eyes wide open. And the second request would be to create a visualization of what that actually would look like and include that in the report so that people could understand it, both residents and the city council can understand what would happen if people build up to the maximum height, so we could see what that wedding cake actually would look like. And I think these tools would help us to make a much more informed decision about whether this is a good plan or not. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Gina Datilo.
I'm an accountant. I have my own timer, so.
Keep us
okay, listen, 177 107th Avenue Northeast. I live in Bellevue Pacific Tower. My family has moved here recently from Colorado. We sold a big home, and now we're living basically in our basement. And I joke to my husband, who's a developer, that I could be a living, walking traffic study. Just put a GPS system on me because I travel all over the place with my kiddos. I have a middle schooler at Chinook, and I basically live on Bellevue and Main Street, and then I have another son all the way at Spirit Ridge, and so all I do is go back and forth, and it's been very stressful for me because all I do is drive, and I do get stuck on Bellevue Way trying to get one kiddo and not be late for the other one, and I have seen that it's gotten worse and worse, and I'm concerned about what it's going to be like in the next 3, 5, 10 years, and I would never want to say, I tell it to my husband all the time, maybe we need to move out of downtown Bellevue because we just can't do it as a family. And I know there are a lot of other families moving here with the same issue. I can't just, my husband can pop on a bus and he can go to Microsoft, but I have to go too many places. That's one issue. And my second issue that I really just want everybody in the room to think about, and the developers may have to close their ears on this one, but I don't think so. There's a safety issue in downtown Bellevue for pedestrians. My 12-year-old should be able to walk to Safeway and get me milk, but we've almost been hit so many times on 2nd Street. And my children and I, unfortunately, came on that accident a couple months ago that a pedestrian was killed right in front of us. My children don't know that that person died, but we went and saw it online, and that person passed away, and I saw that person get hit by a 19-year-old. So my suggestion out of all of this, and I know that I'm late in the game, would be to add something to the amendments or whatever your project is, and this is where the developers have to close their ears, but it's good for everyone, is that maybe part of a requirement for all builders, because the money has to come from somewhere, would be to put aside money into a downtown Bellevue pedestrian safety fund or plan. It would be part of what developers would have to pay for, and that would be maybe working with the Department of Transportation or the police chief on best practices on what to do. For example, put one of those little bumpers down on Northeast 2nd Street, so when the people in their 2017 Maseratis go flying down like the Dukes of Hazzard, like they do all the time, that maybe their car would bottom out and they wouldn't do that again. So something like that. But I think that even developers or anyone, it would benefit everyone. Nobody wants to have anyone, hurt. And with all the traffic that's going to happen, no matter what, it's very dangerous for pedestrians. We have a lot of people internationally. I grew up in Japan. I was a military brat. And for some countries, traffic signs are optional, and you get people that come from a lot of countries, and it's very dangerous. I should feel comfortable with my 12-year-old to let him walk one block this way when I can see him, and one block that way, but they're so afraid that, that someone's going to get hit. It's just not safe. So I think as part of the plan, if you have to change it or postpone it or whatever you have to do, should be to put money aside to get somebody who's really good, Department of Transportation, best practices in downtown Bellevue that we're going to make our pedestrians safe. And there are things that you can do that I don't know about to do that, but I think it would be worth having some type of requirement for money set aside for that. I really feel strongly about it. I don't think anybody in this room ever wants to see what I saw for somebody to get hit like that with all the growth. I think it would be a really good spend of money.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
I believe it's Angela Hachun.
My name is Sesh Belabor. I live in 500 106th Avenue Northeast, Bellevue Towers. By way of background, for the last 25 years, I do research in the field of future studies, write and speak all over the world, especially climate change. So the question I have for the commission is, over the long term, this upzoning, including the existing conditions in Bellevue, will add millions of tons of carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. How are you accounting for making the upzoning and the existing zones carbon neutral? Or perhaps you have assumed, I'm trying to be sarcastic, that climate change is a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Michelle Herman, please.
Good evening. I'm Michelle Herman. I'm also a Bellevue Towers resident. So I also wanted to address the concerns over process. On the April 26th meeting, Commissioner Lang noted that the proposed code doesn't result in taller and skinnier buildings. And I just want to quote quickly from the minutes that I reviewed today, his statement: if there is going to be a conversation about changing building height, massing, and form, the focus should be on requiring what will actually be a skinnier building and not just the portion of the building that exceeds the old maximum height. I thought that was a very helpful statement because it's something that the residents have actually been saying for a long time now. And it was my understanding that Commissioner Lang went on to say that he was even tempted to potentially not support any increases. But then by May 10th at the meeting, I felt like Commissioner Lang did a 180-degree about-face by moving right off the bat to incorporate the recommendations of Wallace Properties that was distributed just prior to the meeting, according to a note on the submission itself from Councilman Kevin Wallace. Obviously, then, the residents hadn't had time to review that or make any counter-proposals or opposition to that, and yet it was approved. The proposals, of course, the residents do oppose. Among other things, it recommends increased floor plates, reduces setbacks, eliminates open spaces, all of the things that residents have asked not to do. The livability process, in our view, has been flawed and heavily biased towards the development community since its inception, as you've heard from others. Residents' concerns about substantive and due process issues have been ignored. At least we feel that they've been ignored over and over again. In recent weeks, in light of this notable shift that we saw, we started looking into things, and we noticed that there are some real conflicts of interest, and they seem to be pervasive, from city council all the way through to this commission. There's a duty for council members as well as planning commissioners to recuse themselves from decisions where they have conflicts of interest. Violations in the context of a legislative policy decision require a showing that the official specifically intended for his or her actions to create a special benefit for himself or herself or for another person. It seems like that's happened here in spades just by looking at the record. According to the Seattle Times, Councilman Kevin Wallace, an owner of Wallace Properties, was the one who appointed Commissioner Lang to this planning commission, and according to that article, other council members objected, which was unusual, and they also felt that the process and where he was appointed was covert and unauthorized.
Michelle, I'm going to just have you to close, if you will. It's almost red.
Okay. In closing, we feel like there are real issues of process here. We feel like we're ignored. These are our homes. We really do care about what happens here, and we would really like you to correct the mistakes that we feel have been made for the last 4-plus years. Thank you.
Commissioner Lang, yes, please.
Thank you, Ms. Herman. I think it's actually appropriate at this point in the meeting for me to speak to this issue. And I actually think it's especially appropriate in following up with to Ms. Herman's comments, because of all the comments that we've received from the various downtown residential residents, I've found yours to be probably the most persuasive and kind of on point with both the recommendation coming out of the Citizen Advisory Committee, which I co-chaired, as well as my own view on downtown livability. In one of your comment letters, Ms. Herman, you pointed out that the issue is not what goes on down in the OLB, and supporting an upzone and height increases and increased density down by the OLB might be okay, but looking at what changes in the core and other parts of the downtown, especially with regard to height increases, could be problematic. I have uniformly, going back to when I was the co-chair of the CAC, raised questions about raising heights anywhere but in the OLB. If you actually read the meeting minutes from May 10th, you will see that subsequent to my motion, the issue of heights was carved out of the recommendation or of the motion that I brought and tabled for further discussion. And if you read the comments that I made subsequent to my motion on the 10th, you will see that I continue to raise questions about why it is that we should be looking at increased heights anywhere else in the downtown. A year ago, a little over a year ago, and I think this is important as we get to the end of this process, I was accused of another conflict of interest, and this actually related to the what's now called the Fortress Project, because a property owner's representatives had contacted me in my professional capacity as a land use attorney during that process to see if I might not be able to help them in upzoning their property. And thrice I declined that representation. And although they are represented by able counsel, I have continued to recuse myself from any discussion of their issue. What many of you tonight might find to be somewhat ironic, maybe amusing, I think unfortunate, is that this week I've been accused of two conflicts of interest, one of them relating to my law firm's representation of Wallace Properties on wholly unrelated matters, and number two, my alleged representation of the Bellevue Towers Residents Association, because I've been an advocate for the Bellevue Towers, in their mind, the Bellevue Towers residents, in their opposition to the proposed height increases. And I was asked, even by the city manager on the phone yesterday, if I represented the Bellevue Towers residents because I have been so outspoken about the height increases that are being proposed. I have spent no less than a couple of hours on the phone and in face-to-face meetings with other downtown stakeholders who are concerned at my vocal opposition to the proposed height increases that the Bellevue Towers residents have and the concerns that the Bellevue Towers residents have raised going all the way back to the very end of the CAC process. So I find it to be a little bit ironic, somewhat hurtful, but understandable. And I'm not defensive that this is coming up at the 11th hour. If you carefully look at the motion that I made, I have blanket moved five recommendation letters into the draft for discussion purposes only without taking a position on any of the things. My understanding of the Wallace letter, along with some of the other things, is that those changes were focused on the OLB. And if you look at the draft changes that were made for the meeting tonight, they have nothing to do with looking at heights outside of the OLB. So I have to say, if the Bellevue Towers downtown residents feel that I need to recuse myself from the discussion of the tower height or the proposed height increases, that's fine. Please ask me to do so, and I will consider that, and I will take counsel from my fellow commissioners. But understand, there's been nobody sitting up here who has been a more vocal opponent to those proposed height increases than me. So be careful what you wish for.
Thank you, Commissioner Lang, for a very thoughtful response. We have six more people signed up. If you would restrict yourselves to about 2 minutes or so, we can actually get through the whole list before the session starts. So next up, Mr. Don Hassan.
Thank you. My name is Don Hassan. I live at 650 Bellevue Way, One Lincoln Tower. Like the sign says, it says, welcome to your planning commission. And I think because of the lack of attendance here is because it seems like our comments go on deaf ears. And I was just kind of wondering if there was some type of town hall meeting that can be brought up where we can actually talk to each other and find out what's really going on and how we can cooperate and get things done. Like I said in a previous talk, my main concern is that time is not of the essence here. All I ask is that we wait like 9 months after the Bellevue expansion gets full and the restaurants and the 425 center building get fully occupied, and then really determine what kind of situation we're going to have in the city. Because once this decision's made and they get the okay to build it, you can't undo it. So all I'm asking is just give us some time, like 9 months after the buildings get full. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, one more thing. Currently in the documentation it says the building height is 250. I think we could have avoided this whole problem if it had said the building height is 302 and then have a little footnote that says it could be 302 if you meet these requirements, otherwise it'll be 250. Because a lot of people and real estate people go in and they say, the first thing they ask when they buy a high-rise is, what's going to happen to my view? And so far they've all said it's been 250. And they've never said, oh, with caveats and stuff like that. You even go down to City Hall, what's the building height? I got it here. It just says 250. So the documentation needs to be cleaned up real soon.
Thank you, sir.
It'd be better
to time, so if you want to just wrap up quickly, if you would.
Okay, yeah. It'd be better to say it's 302 with caveats to the builder that it's that way. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kevin Whitaker, please.
Hello again. My name is Kevin Whitaker. I live at 10700 Northeast 4th Street. I'm not familiar with all the rules and procedures here. Is it possible for me to just ask a question of the commission and then cede the rest of my time to being answered?
I would urge you to give us your comments in terms of what you want to share, and perhaps we could come back at the end of the session if you had a question for the commissioners.
Okay. I can't really improve on most of what all my cohorts have said, so I'll just reiterate what the high points of what I thought was really well said, which is people feel like we've been misserved as far as transparency goes and access to the process. One suggestion I would make would be to maybe include some better education pieces for the lay folk out here where the code can be deciphered for a normal person to read it, you know, much like he was saying, give us what the actual maximum height is, not what the base height is, and then a bunch of footnotes and caveats that nobody can decipher. So maybe some education piece. I also agree with maybe delaying in this process, because most of us have happened upon it at the last minute just due to lack of education on it, and give some good back and forth between community members and you guys where we can have a discussion instead of just, you know, saying words, and then you say words, and we aren't actually having a conversation. Thanks very much.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Ian Morrison, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Commission. My name is Ian Morrison. I'm an attorney with McCullough Hill, 701 Fifth Avenue, Suite 6600, Seattle, Washington, here on behalf of PMF Investments with a short message, which is thank you. Thank you. The title up there says May 24th, 2015, which I think is accurate because we were here in May of 2015 before the Planning Commission. And over the last 2 years of a very thoughtful and deliberative process, you know, we really appreciate the work that the commission and the community and staff have done to bring forward the attempt to reach consensus on the big rocks, as the chair is often referring to. And we, on behalf of PMF, which has the site, as you know, the Sheraton site on the corner of 112th and Main, are very excited about the opportunities and the work that commission and staff have done. We think that there has been a great dialogue about the opportunity for this gateway transformational site. You've heard from some of the resident comments today that that OLB neighborhood, that gateway, is a neighborhood that really could support some strategic density. And so we want to say thank you for the thoughtful and deliberative process over the last 2 years, and we really appreciate the work that has gone into that OLB. And you, planning commissioners, gave us one task, which is there was an issue about the treatment of the parking garages that face 405, and you tasked us to work with staff to try to find a solution that would allow for a sort of an attractive facade when you're looking from Wilburton into the downtown for those parking garages that are adjacent there, which is a unique condition. And we're happy to report that after a lot of work and discussion with staff and a lot of hard negotiation, we think we have a solution that works for, that has, as staff will tell you, works for staff and also works for those property owners that would like to have this be an amazing gateway, but also have some flexibility to recognize the unique condition of building a parking garage next to a highway. So our message is simply thank you. We are very appreciative for the work that you have put into this, the work that staff has put into us, and we would ask that this consensus amendment for this minor piece on parking garages in 405 would be supported. So thank you again.
Thank you. Mr. Patrick Bannon, please.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the Commission. My name is Patrick Bannon. I'm president of the Bellevue Downtown Association. I'm here tonight just to relay comments based on an email I sent in earlier today, and that is to thank you again for your time and commitment to shaping the draft land use code. The Planning Commission, through its time of review, has been receptive to public comment, thoughtful in discussion. And after more than 4 years of dialogue, we're pleased to see the draft land use code reach this point of transmittal from commission to council, where the conversation will continue. And I know where much of the community, whether they're developer, private owner, or resident, will be able to continue to ask good questions about the benefits and the impacts of the draft land use code. We feel wholeheartedly that this code is a much better code than the existing code, and that the intent of the CAC to look at height changes has been for the intent of creating slender towers that create more light and air and a better outcome in downtown. You have limited increases to density to the downtown OLB. The leveling of the FAR at 5 for non-residential and residential in the downtown MU zone, and to the gateway corner at Main and 112th. We will continue to strongly recommend a few additional changes to the code moving forward, and one of those includes the base height calculation, from especially in the OLB, where there's such a dramatic gap between the base height and the max height where amenity calculation occurs. I think based on comments we've heard from residents tonight that there is a need for additional community conversation, especially around transportation and safety in downtown Bellevue. It's a question that everyone is asking, and fortunately the city did pass a transportation levy last year to allocate funds towards safety projects, and the city council has adopted a Vision Zero policy, which all of us, I hope, can get further engaged on. So with regard to the downtown land use code update and downtown livability, thank you again for your attention to the key issues and your leadership throughout the process.
Thank you. Mr. Jack McCullough, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. Jack McCullough, 701 Fifth Avenue, Suite 6600, Seattle 98104. I had three things to say tonight. First, I wanted to respond on behalf of Fortress Development to the eloquent speech that Mr. Lang gave. I would observe that, if anything, he has brought to his deliberations perhaps an unnecessarily conservative approach to disqualifying himself on some of the issues relating to this property. For the record, no one from Fortress Development had ever contacted Mr. Lang in the early part of these proceedings. I've been counsel for that group from the beginning. May have been a prior owner. We don't know. But but no one has, and so frankly, your recusal on these matters from our point of view was unnecessary. But additional conservatism in this field doesn't harm anyone, right? So, second point. We are working, this is informational, with staff in the city attorney's office on, there are a couple, three projects that have been in the process for, 2 years or more that have permits, ADRs that are still waiting to come out. And so we're working with them. It would be unfair, inequitable in those circumstances to change the rules on them at the last minute after investing hundreds of thousands of dollars in their projects. So we're working on some transition vesting language to be incorporated in the final ordinance. I can think of two projects that both literally have been around for 2 years, including Summit 3, that will, may be moving forward. So, and the final point is I just want to say you've run a good process here. It's been a long one. I went back over some of the old notes, and a lot of stuff was left on the cutting room floor, I know, but through two chairs, you've done an exemplary job of providing for transparency and, I think, public input and participation on behalf of all sectors of the community. We are on the one-yard line and look forward to you completing your work tonight. There is urgency to this. There are people with sites who've been watching this process very closely, who've been involved in it, who are looking forward to investing and proceeding under the new code that you've developed. It's been 36 years, I think, right, since we did this last time. I think it's time to get the show on the road. And
I know you're thanking us, Jack, but I'm going to have to pause you.
I'm all done. Thank you very much, and good luck tonight.
Mr. So I apologize. I can't quite spell the last name. It's Richard Schomburg. It says the organization is BPT. All right, so we'll keep moving on then in that case. We actually ran through the entire list of people signed up for public comment. If you hadn't signed up, we'll defer. We will have comment at the end of the session as well. So moving on to the next item on the agenda, which is our staff study session.
I just want to just take a quick moment. So we heard the theme of deferring the decision, wait until occupancy, et cetera, et cetera. Because I know a lot of people, you don't come to this process or these commissions on a regular basis. I just want you to know is we have been clearly directed by the mayor to complete tonight. Okay, so that's been a direction that we and this body have been given. So if it does not get deferred tonight, I don't want you to think that we're not listening to you. It's not that at all. We really don't have a lot of control of the timing at times, and so that's the direction we've been given. So I'm sure probably a lot of us could keep going or we'd like to have bigger conversations, but we serve at the pleasure of the mayor and the council. And when we are given those timelines, unless they are taken off, we have to abide by those. So please don't think we're not listening to you when we don't defer. We can't defer unless staff tells us something differently at this point. So I just wanted to say that publicly for you guys.
Thank you, Michelle. So good evening. Well, we'll give it to Mr. Cullen. Maybe you want to set some context for us in terms of the study session, Mr. Cullen.
Thank you, Chair Davidos. On the agenda tonight is the Downtown Livability Land Use Code Amendments. This is the public hearing for this was held on March the 8th, and there have been several study sessions since. As Commissioner Hillhorst just said, the understanding and expectation and the schedule is that the Planning Commission would conclude tonight. And tonight we've got staff that are going to be giving you a presentation. And from the staff we have Interim Director for Planning Community Development, Dan Stroh. We've got Strategic Planning Manager, Emil King from Planning and Community Development. And we've got the code manager, Trish Byers, who's with Development Services. And I believe that in our conversations, Chair, is that staff has been allocated 30 minutes, and then over to the Commission for discussion and action.
Thank you, Mr. Cullen. Good evening again. I would request that, given that this particular meeting is about deliberation, if you could contain the presentation to even less than 30 minutes, that would be ideal.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Yeah. And good evening, Chair Davidos and Planning Commission members. Yes, I don't think we're anywhere near half an hour for our presentation tonight. This is an important meeting. At the so the point of 4 years have gone by with work, first by the Citizen Advisory Committee, a pretty lengthy process of doing a land use code audit to see what needed to be changed in our code, what was working well, what could work better. We then went through a process of bringing that back to the council for direction. And we have been with the Planning Commission here now for quite a long period of time, going through first some general direction and then with the draft code, walking through the details of the code. I would say in terms of the term livability and downtown livability, it's part of a much larger agenda for downtown livability. So by no means is the land use code the entire city work effort around downtown livability. There's a companion downtown transportation plan and implementation effort around that piece to deal with a number of issues, some of which we heard about tonight. There's a companion piece around parks and public safety and other elements of livability. So the code piece is part of this livability agenda for downtown, but by no means the entire part of livability. It really hones in on what we can do to influence the private development to do what it can and what it should to mitigate its impacts and get a better outcome than we have today. We have done, as you know, amendments of the downtown land use code over the years, but they've been very surgical. This is the first time we've done a broader sweeping review of the downtown code since its 1981 adoption. So that's what's unique about this effort, and I think why it's taken us so long, because it is a complex document, and there's a lot of moving parts here. Tonight, we hope to discuss a few outstanding issues, include a few that you raised at your last meeting, and bring those back for direction. And then it's an opportunity for you to look at the entire package and see whether, in fact, looking from the council principles, from the public feedback that you've had, and from actually the consistency with the CAC itself in terms of the intent, is the entire package consistent with where the Planning Commission feels is the right balance point to be struck. And then finally, we have an outline of a transmittal, which would be the transmittal that would go to the council to provide some your insight and observations and other elements that you want to convey when this does come to the council. So that's the ground we wanted to cover tonight. And I'm going to turn it over to Emil King.
Yes, I just wanted to briefly summarize where we are in the overall process. We staff continues to get comments from the public about not knowing exactly what happens when the commission process ends and what happens at the city council. So this is intended to be our final meeting with the commission on the downtown livability. Your transmittal would then go to council, and they, as the decision makers, would have a series of study sessions for them to be comfortable with the package. So anything you do here tonight is still a recommendation to council, and the city council is the ultimate decision maker on these, just so we're clear with everyone. The two items that we listed in your Planning Commission packet for that were open questions from the May 10th meeting, the first one relates to the any additional direction you'd like to provide on the 10% floor plate reduction. So that was raised by Commissioner Lang a couple meetings ago. So we are happy to help out with your discussion on that as needed. And then as Mr. Morrison stated in the public comment, based on commission direction, we've been working with Morrison and specific to the PMF site and the OLB South on some design treatments for parking garages. So if you remember, that area is kind of a gateway into downtown. We've been able to come up with a design down there for parking garages that both has art and green space at the lower levels of the garages, and then anything that's visible from the freeway height and above on a garage would basically need to have glazing to kind of replicate either a residential or office building. The one footnote on that is there was interest from PMF and staff as well as making sure that that glazing didn't result in needing to fully ventilate that space. So it could still have natural ventilation, but from the outside look like, you know, a building. So that was the kind of design solution we came up with. So I know you have that in your information tonight. We don't necessarily need to spend any more time on that if you're okay with the solution that we arrived at. You've been continuing to get public comments, so we just want to note that there are comments both in the Planning Commission packet, in your desk packet, and the new information you got tonight. So now's the time to think about those. And then two items that we have under our kind of staff observations and additional discussion. One of them is we've been looking hard at the O2 South area, which is that area just kind of south of Bellevue Towers, and looking at the different development potential there with how the code is shaping up from the commission. So we have some additional insights we'd like to give you on that area, as well as a recommendation that you can consider relating to the building heights. And then we would like to just make some observations on the open space related to the higher building heights and the whole the trigger height. We know that the commission did form a recommendation on that that's in your code package right now, but we thought now would be the time to just offer additional insights on that as well. So the way this is laid out in your packet on pages 17 through 22, Trish has gone through and done an annotated table of contents that essentially states in each section in terms of how the code has either moved around from what you see in the existing land use code or what really is the new content that's included in there. So it's good to have that as kind of your orientation if you're kind of looking for where things are in the overall land use code. And from pages 23 to 169, we've essentially taken the March 8th public hearing draft and done a strike underline of all the direction that you've given us over the past four meetings. So we've been kind of meticulously keeping track of all your direction and making sure that you can track it word for word, the changes based on the public hearing draft. And really the intent of the discussion tonight is does this code, as you have it now, reflect the council principles, CAC intent, and the initial commission direction that you've given us? We do have the council principles that were developed at the very beginning of the project on page 7 of your packet. We also have the principles that related to the incentive zoning system that they adopted in January of 2016 following that joint meeting that you had with them on incentive zoning. And on pages 177 and 178, we actually have the what we call the relationship to livability statements or objectives in the code that were in the staff report that went out with the public hearing draft. So it's always good to keep those in mind because what we're trying to do is make the downtown more livable. So reflecting back to see if you're still meeting those objectives is something that is good to do. And as we've done for the past few meetings, we've itemized your direction we got from the May 10th meeting on pages 2 to 6 of the agenda memo tonight, so you can look back and see the direction you gave us at that point and how it's reflected in this code. So at this point, if it's okay with you, Chair Dobbs, we can move on to the first of the outstanding issues that we identified.
Yes, please.
This was, as you remember, raised by Commissioner Lang, and it was really about is the 10% reduced floor plate in the draft code sufficient to really result in taller, more slender buildings? So we talked a bit about this at your last meeting and really honed in on the O1 and O2 is probably zones where it's most pertinent. We typically see floor plates of a bigger size in those areas because of the allowances for office buildings in the 20 to 24,000 square foot range. And with residential towers not as big as a starting point, I think it was questioned whether or not we needed to do anything more than 10% reduction for the residential. So we're just Bringing this back up, we know the commission wanted to potentially have more discussion about this. So, if you want, we can pause and the commission can discuss this as they see fit.
Yeah, if I may, let's just run through the list of items you have.
Okay.
And then we can
come back
to it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sounds good. So now we're honing in on the downtown O2 South, and we, as you can see on this previous map, the downtown O2 is really split between the area north of Northeast 8th, the area east of 110th, as well as the area south of Northeast 4th. I think a lot of discussion has been on development potential down in those areas and what it means for that general part of downtown. How is it consistent with the wedding cake? We took the approach of looking at the current commission's land use code recommendation and seeing as it redevelops, are we going to be getting buildings that are even going to be piercing some of these building heights? So we stepped back and looked at the area west of 106th and the area east of 106th. I'll zoom in a bit on that a bit more. So the area west of 106 includes the northern part of the Avalon Safeway project. It was built in a split zone situation, so part of it's in O2, part of it's in general MU zoning. And then it also includes, right under where it says the word south, it includes the Jamba Juice, Chipotle, the old Golden Coin Shop, so those other parcels that are clearly redevelopable in that area. And then east of 106 is where you see Expedia and some of the FANA properties in that area. So as we looked at this even further, you can see the northern part of the Avalon Safeway, they actually did not go to their maximum building height that they were allowed by code. They decided to do a shorter wood frame over concrete and steel project. And the unique situation as we kind of drilled down on this area was it really gives you two about 25,000 square foot redevelopment sites if you were able to aggregate some of the lot ownership. So PACCAR owns a couple parcels down in this area, but then there's also some other ownership. So this would, even if lands were assembled into kind of the biggest building block in the O2 zone, you're going to have about 25,000 square foot development sites. So the unique part here is we have this 20-foot public right-of-way that I'll show you a picture of in a second that essentially goes from Northeast 4th down towards Northeast 2nd. And that, in our opinion, is going to severely limit, you know, the heights that people could get without doing some extraordinary measures. So what we did was looked at each one of these properties, looked at the FAR as it currently stands with the commission. The O2 zone allows a 6 FAR. We also assumed that they would go through a process to even get a full 1 FAR exemption for retail, which usually doesn't happen to that extent, but we're just assuming kind of a worst-case scenario. And also...
microphone closer to your voice, please.
Yeah, sorry about that. And also assumed that the affordable housing exemption that was has been proposed by the commission was pursued. So in a nutshell, if you were to take all the development potential on each of those 20,000 square foot sites and did floor plates below what people typically do, so assuming something like a 9,000 square foot floor plate for residential, our estimation is buildings would be about in the 240-foot range or so. So that assumes a podium filling up the site, taking the FAR and kind of extruding it up in 9,000 square foot floor plates, as well as the 20-foot mechanical that's in the current code. So what this is showing is, you know, if someone were to actually go in here and had the goal of doing something fairly tall but having reasonable floor plates, it's going to be lower than even what is assumed the max height for the rest of the O2 zone. This is a picture of that right-of-way. If people have been down to Jamba Juice or Chipotle, you kind of look straight south from Northeast 4th, and you can see that right-of-way. The city is not right now contemplating or interested in vacating that, so we do want to see the city public right-of-way preserved in that area, even though it is kind of an anomaly in the downtown. We feel like it serves a unique function here. So our staff recommendation on this one for the commission to consider would be for that red area, so just the west part It would basically be splitting the O2 South into two pieces based on this kind of additional, more in-depth analysis of it, and keeping essentially the current height limits under the current code, which are 250 feet. There is a provision for 15% increase that most developments get, so it's 288 feet, as well as the exception would be the 5-foot increase for mechanical, which the commission has been contemplating from 15 to 20. So that's kind of our more thorough look at this, and we're trying to see if there was a compromise solution for this overall O2 South area based on kind of the unique circumstances of these two particular properties down here.
John, if I may?
Please, yeah.
I have a question for staff. So has staff looked at the option if someone were to come in and buy all these sites, so now it will become 50,000 square foot, and with the city right of way and having an overpass over that, could they still achieve the 345 that we're considering?
If you were able to, I'll just go back here so people can see this. The city has been approached in the past about options to build over the 20-foot right of way. The city has also in the past been approached in different areas about vacating right of way. Mm-hmm. We had a staff discussion with our kind of the departments and didn't see any merit to pursuing either a build-over option or a vacation option for that right-of-way. So you're correct that if those two sites functioned as one combined development site, clearly they could go beyond 240 feet because you could put it all into one tower. But the unique circumstance here and the commitment to retain that 20-foot right away would essentially mean that you couldn't get enough FAR to go well above 240 or so. So you're correct that a combined site would have a different provision. So we were seeing where the ultimate code was landing to figure out we were using all the provisions that you had in place as far as FAR transfer and other super bonuses and things like that, so we could have a good grasp on the ultimate FAR on that property.
Thanks, Emil.
So the last piece that we just wanted to talk about was the original concept for the 10% outdoor plaza.
I'll be happy to address this one. So again, on the O2 and that section of the O2, we think that given it's unlikely that it's possible to actually achieve a tower at what's in the current code of the that higher height being added, it really sets an expectation of something that's not likely to happen, and it's actually a better outcome to actually adopt into a code the existing height limit and not modify that height limit for that particular area west, the west side of 106th in the O2 there. So that is our staff recommendation at this point. It is a result of this new information, honestly. That's an unusual right-of-way that actually does bisect those two properties. That analysis does show rather unique condition there. Moving on to this other issue, in the retreats with the Planning Commission, one of the requests that you had of staff was if we were going to take issue in front of the council with recommendations that the Planning Commission have, that we would be very transparent about that. And this is one we'd like to bring to your attention in that spirit, really trying to follow through on the spirit of the retreat and being clear. So we're very transparent about any issues we might take. And this issue here goes back to the concept of a required open space in the case of buildings using additional building height. And this would not affect buildings that are maxing out under the existing height they're allowed today. So the idea of a required open space of 10% of the ground floor of the site being required to be an open space, publicly accessible, came from really the trying to make sure that we follow through on the promise of if we actually did have taller buildings, that they really would result in more slender buildings, more slender building forms with additional open space at the ground floor. So it's really trying to follow through on this. And just, again, to be very transparent and honest, staff felt that this is a really, really important part of the idea of additional building height. And so we would recommend that this is something that would be retained in the draft code
again, not affecting buildings maxing out under the existing height, but if additional height is going to be used, that that be accompanied by a requirement for this 10% open space, which essentially creates a situation of having a public plaza that's usable and accessible and provides additional light and air also at the ground plane of buildings that are choosing to go higher. So that's the one item we did want to bring to your attention, again, in the spirit of the retreat, so that we're very open about any issues that we were going to take there. Is that the end of our...
The only additional slide, Chair Davidos, is after you finish your deliberations on the land use code, we do need to remember to go back and ensure that the other recommendations that are above and beyond the specifics of the current code are included appropriately in your transmittal.
Right. Thank
so
you.
Let's remember to go back to this one at the end.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. And very much on time. Thank you again, Dan. Appreciate it.
John, if I
yes, know. Please, yeah.
Quick question. You had a slide for the O2 South where Dan started talking, and it says 288 is the height. My recollection for O2 South is that we're considering 345.
Yes, the current recommendation in the land use code is essentially 300 plus an extra 45 feet, so 345 plus mechanical equipment of 20 feet. So the existing, we're referring to the currently adopted code on the book. So we tried to figure out the right wording to not confuse things, but this is the adopted height limit on the books right now. If you were going to go to our land use code, it says 250, and then there is notes that give ways to get up to 288. So we're essentially retaining the current height limits.
Thank you. That's a good clarification. Area. Thank you.
Thanks
again. So just quickly, if I may, you heard from Michelle, our past chair, in terms of the expectations. We've spent multiple years. It's been a very long journey for staff, certainly for the commissioners, and of course for our citizens and members of the community as well. The expectation is that at this point, after about, 20, maybe 22 sessions, that we go back with our recommendations back to the council. And, of course, they will then deliberate probably over the summer and, of course, make their own conclusions. So I want to just set the context. That is the expectation. So I want to open it up for the commissioners now. I think it's time for closure from my perspective. We've heard a lot. We've read a lot. Lots of feedback, but certainly now I think it behooves us to make some decisions and give it over to the council. So I want to open it up for the commissioners in terms of your input. Commissioner Lang, please. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Davidos. I have a bunch of what I consider to be non-substantive changes that are just kind of like, and I'll give an example so the commission, my fellow commissioners, can appreciate it. One of them is just a consistent way of putting numbers. So you'll see like 40% or 105 feet or whatever throughout. And the draft, the existing code, it just, even within the same paragraph, is using different ways of referring to numbers. And I can tell you, having drafted both codes as well as many contracts, it's a very poor drafting method. And what I would like to see as a global change within the document, for this is one, is that all numbers are spelled out in words and then put parenthetically in the numerals. And so let me give an example. 40% would be F-O-R-T-Y, percent spelled out, and then parentheses, the number 40 with the percent sign, close parentheses. For heights, 105 feet would be 105 spelled out feet, parentheses, the 105 with the, little tick mark. You know, same thing for inches and all the rest of that throughout the draft. And I've gone through and very carefully I've actually found places where I think there are probably even typos and stuff with them. I don't want to go through like that, but I think that if we do one thing, if we make that change, that will ensure that we have no errors in terms of the numbers that are in the draft. I don't know how people feel about that, if I need to bring a motion, but I think that that's really important, especially having gone through this thing a couple of times in many hours. I think there are already some issues in there. The second is a...
I can see you've done your homework on that one, Commissioner Lang. So, Mr. Cullen, should we... Do we require a motion to make sure this input gets in?
No, sir. I think you can just simply direct staff to make that.
Very good. Thank you. So I think we will just... Please.
Offer some just information. I don't have any issues with that, but the tables become impossible with all of the words.
I would make the caveat that actually within the dimensions listed in the tables, it's fine not to do that because a lot of times things are being repeated enough times that it would stand out if there are error. But in the actual text, you know, it's just hodgepodge how things are referenced, okay. And it's unclear. And
the only other caveat I would have with that is depending on timing that we have, as you know, the time pressures that we're under, I would, for all of us, I want to concentrate specifically on what you all have to say and make sure that the substantive is the most important thing. So
I think you're going to have a lot of time to put this together for the council, so I'm not concerned about
I that. I don't believe that I will have much time at all. So I'm just warning you. We will do our very best to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that at all, but I just want to make sure that you all know that there may be some competing time issues.
Thank you. So I'm not a lawyer, but I've been given feedback that we should be very precise about how we depict this.
Absolutely.
So I will just give it back to you. So do your best, and we'll. Okay. Thank you.
Second thing. Throughout the Part 2025A, which is the downtown overlay, essentially, the area that the overlay applies to is alternately referred to as downtown, downtown subarea, sometimes subarea is capitalized, sometimes it's uncapitalized, or downtown district, sometimes capitalized and uncapitalized. I would recommend that in the outset in 2025A010, the general section, when it says applicability, that we come up with one reference to downtown, whatever we want to call it. I think downtown without saying subarea or the rest of it is probably good, that we make a reference to whatever that definition is, whether it's the reference to the comprehensive plan map or something, so we're defining what the geographic area is, and then just use that word throughout the entire code.
I quite agree. I think clarity requires consistency, and you're right. We're not being... is consistent there. People need to know what you're referring to. So I would second and endorse that position.
Okay. Third, throughout the code draft, I see references to this code or the code with code being capitalized, with code being uncapitalized. I see reference to land use code. I see reference to LUC, which I presume is an abbreviation of land use code. And it's not always clear whether it's intended to be the entire land use code, just the downtown subarea and the rest of it. And so, again, for clarity, we need to look at all of those things. And I would recommend that if we're talking about the code, and we're meaning Bellevue's code, at a minimum, it should always be capitalized and should be understood from the front what is being referred to in the code. And that's especially important because there are sections in here that carve out the applicability of other portions of the land use code as a whole versus downtown. So I think that that's really important. Third thing is the... and I'm just kind of moving through this in order, is there's no definition of alley in the definitions under 2025A020. And this is important because we have an entire section about alleyways with or alleys with addresses. And in our definition section in Section B, we actually say that among the definitions not applicable to downtown is the definition in the general code to alley. So now we have no definition for alley. So I'd recommend either that we use the existing definition for alley or we have a definition for alley because there's a lot dealing with alleys in here. And I don't know if my fellow commissioners have a strong preference for we create a new definition for alley or we just use the land use code definition. I've looked at it. It seems perfectly serviceable, but...
I'm not seeing any feedback. Please.
No, as long as it's clear and consistent, okay. I mean, I don't need a new definition.
So, yeah, my preference would be to just retain the existing definition that's already in the code. And so that would mean that subsection B, which is 2025A020, subsection B as in boy, where we have definitions not applicable to downtown, the first one being alley, would be stricken so that that definition would be applicable to downtown. Or we can all wordsmith a new definition. Okay. In that same vein, we have had this concept, and this is in 2025A020A, in the definitions that apply only within the downtown. We've got this concept called a project limit. Project limit is defined as, quote, a lot, portion of a lot, combination of lots, or portions of combined lots treated as a single development parcel for purposes of land use code. To me, this just adds a layer of confusion, and I'm going to tell you why. As you read through the downtown code, you are going to see alternately, and probably the most common word used to refer to what is sort of being defined as the project limit here is site, S-I-T-E, which, under the existing code, is defined as a lot or group of lots associated with a certain application, comma, building or buildings or other development. So we've got this new land use code that over and over and over and over and over and over again refers to site, a development site. But we've got this new definition of a project limit, which sounds an awful lot like a site. We also define lot as a single parcel of land irrespective of the method of legal description. And so this concept of a lot becomes sort of like the sort of basis. It could be an Freudian slip, aggregation, or whatever. My recommendation would be to just eliminate the reference to project limit and just use the definition for site as it's already used throughout the existing code as it is. And I even found instances going through the code where in the same provision, it refers to project limit, site, parcel, and or lot. Like, and I mean sort of interchangeably. So I would just recommend that we get rid of project limit and refer to site.
I would support that based on the definition. It works.
Okay. Just a quick note, in public realm, the definition says streets, parks, and other open spaces and the accessible parts of private buildings. I believe it's the publicly accessible parts of private buildings is what is intended there for the public realm. And as you see this term or concept used throughout the code, everywhere else in the code has the word publicly before accessible except for the definition. So I'd recommend that we add the word publicly before accessible in the definition when we're talking about the public realm. Okay.
Agreed, yep.
In the definition of... So now that we have some agreement about the site project limit issue, for interior property line, the definition right now says a property line other than the build-to line, and I think it should say a property line other than... A property line... other than the build-to line within a project site. Does that make sense? Because you could have an aggregation of lots, therefore multiple property lines, but you what you're really talking about is the exterior, the interior-exterior line, if that makes sense. So you've got your two, like if you have a corner site, you might have four lots that comprise the site, but your interior property line is going to be not the ones down on the corner along the street, but the two here. Well, you've got multiple lots that comprise. So do you have, does each square have a interior property line? You see the problem? So I think we need just to clarify that, that what we're talking about is the line of the site and not the individual lots that may comprise the site. So, and does that make sense?
Yep, I concur. Yep, thank you.
All right. Under the definition for small site, it says a lot equal or less than, I think it should say equal to or less than 40,000 square feet, and then it should say in area.
Yeah. That's just good grammar.
Okay. So I don't know that anybody, yeah. But, you know, these are important because somebody like, not me, obviously, that would be a conflict, but maybe Mr. McCullough or Mr. Morrison will be fighting over these things. Looking at the definition of tower, which is on page 30 of our packet, it says any building located in the downtown subarea. I would just strike in the downtown subarea. These are definitions that only apply to downtown. And is it the downtown subarea with a capital S? Or sorry. Anyway, so I would just strike that language. It's redundant. With regard to the subsection B on page 31, and this is in definitions, you'll note that these are definitions that don't apply in downtown. The setback, you'll see there's like setback front, you know, there's several of those, and there's like a couple different tree diameters. Well, under building height, if you go into the land use code and you look in the definition sections, there's actually multiple subsections of building height. And although I would agree that it's self-evident, some of them, they reference like shoreline and stuff, and clearly, like we all know right now, downtown's not shoreline, but hey, you know, this global warming thing keeps coming, just saying. So I would recommend that those other definitions that start out with building height be also listed there if it's the intent that those not apply in the downtown. And I think some of them are self-evident that they don't, but nevertheless, I would recommend that you have them there because there are some differences, substantive differences in those definitions. Did I already say the that which thing? So throughout the code, you see the word W-H-I-C-H, and it's used in multiple areas where it's actually supposed to be the word that. Usually, which is following a comma, and it's often for superfluous information. This is all gold, so you can't call it superfluous. So probably, yeah. So I'd go through and almost always remove the word which. Mm-hmm. I see the word should and the word must, where the word shall is it should probably be. So I would look at a global replace of should and must with shall.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Lang, what yes. would we do without you?
You'd probably be done with this 2.5 years ago and probably be on your way home by now tonight. Or at least listening to the second half of public comment. I'm trying to avoid getting into anything substantive.
While you're looking, let me run yes. an idea past my fellow commissioners, if I could. I've always thought that we should try and make the law as comprehensible and as clear as possible for the average layperson. And when we're talking about the issue of building heights, as an example, let's say it's the limit in a given area is 300 feet, but then there's a 15% incentive structure built in plus another 12 feet for mechanical. It says 300 feet. It should probably say, you know, 360 feet. In other words, we should start high with what the incentives and the mechanical allow with an asterisk and then say base height, 300 plus, you know, 15% incentives plus 12 feet for mechanical, whatever.
I thought we did that.
Yeah, we did that.
Big.
Could I supplement what you said that to something that I think might be even easier? More images that provide a graphical, a visual representation of it so that people can readily see it.
We've asked for that.
Yeah. And I would also add one way to make it more consumable for lay people, including myself, is I'm going to pull from the software industry. Learn more. And having places outside of the code where people can learn more about the key concepts. I know it means building up a whole new section of the website and stuff, but having the code linked to those areas where people can learn about the concepts that we're talking about in the code.
In other words, let's tell the public and show the public by way of illustration exactly how we're changing the status quo.
And I echo that, the difference between what was and what is. I actually took some time today to make myself some little graphic pictures, and I laid a couple out next to each other. It took me a long time because I was using a software not intended to do this, but it really highlighted some differences to me. And I think the picture, we're all different in how much we can conceptualize based on numbers in black and white on a page, but I think the visual, I think if we're going website, it should be like 3D that can move around so that you can really see what's happening here, because I've looked at these numbers a long, long, long time, and every time I look at them, they become more clear and more evident. And so somebody picking it up one time who isn't a professional is only going to struggle. So I think those ideas are really great.
And there was also feedback, I think, during public comment as well. Likewise, for a visual depiction, so I think we would echo that feedback. Back to you, Commissioner Lang.
Similar to the must, should, the word will, so when you see, for example, in lieu of fees collected by the city will be placed, it should say shall be placed, so the wills should be shalls. The will shall be shalls?
Anyway. That would be aggravating.
Yes. thank you, sir. I'm trying to avoid getting into substantive changes because those will require discussion. I have substantive changes that may not be super controversial. They're certainly not touching on we'll call it the height issues and stuff. But thank you. Those things I think will go a long way to clarity.
Thank you. So just quickly, I think Commissioner Barksdale, Commissioner Morrison, and then Commissioner Walter, please.
All right, two quick things. Also, toward making it more consumable, I would recommend maybe having periodic focus groups with the community to run through the code and use that as a way to iteratively improve the plain language of the code, or getting an idea of what additional help text might be useful. In terms of the incentive system, the amenity incentive system, I did see that it was added, that there would be the annual performance review. Thank you. One thing I want to emphasize, because the intent behind it is to decide, help inform which, whether to pivot in terms of which ones are still necessary. So I wonder if there's a way to add some sort of threshold or something that says, okay, if, because I get the annual performance, and I don't know to what extent of the review would happen, but I would like something in there that says once we've achieved, some percentage of this amenity that was the target, then there's a deeper level discussion about should we continue with that amenity for some time period, because that's the intent.
If I could ask, how do you propose we do that, Commissioner Bergstrom?
Yeah, so and that's what I was saying, maybe some percentage. So I'll take the one that we have so far, right, which was that came up later, previously, and that was what, the underground parking, I think, or the one that the market has sort of shifted, and so it wasn't necessary to keep it as an incentive. So something that, if you start to see the market is shifting in some way, I mean, you can help me come up with a measure, then maybe you disable that like amenity for some period of time.
I think that would be easy in some respects. For instance, if there's some amenity that's just not being used, it would be much easier. It's hard to set it on the upper limit and what you would do with that. Do you see what I'm saying? So if you have, if open space or one of the open space things is used a lot, you probably want to keep that one. And so,
yeah,
you know, I'm not sure that that would be as helpful as on the ones that are never, ever used. That could be just taken out and maybe substituted with something else.
Sure.
So I think... but I don't know how the commission would like to, I mean, how many years would that be and that kind of thing. So you'd have to be thinking about how that would be measured and when you would review that. You know, is it an annual thing or longer, that kind of thing, and how many is it really nobody uses the amenity or is it just one development?
Yeah, so I think it's at both ends of the spectrum, right? No one's using it, you know. Also, everyone's using it. So if you see prevalence of it
right,
increasing,
change the weighting,
mm-hmm. things like that. So I don't know what performance review entails, but I would like for it to have a little deeper
okay.
meaning, I guess is what I'm saying, where some decision is coming out of it.
Thank you. Commissioner Morrison, please.
If I may follow on Commissioner Barksdale's, I think I understand the intent. And I wonder if the fact that we've changed the timeline to be 5 to 7 years now, would that help with what you're trying to accomplish? Because in order to see really the impact, like how many developers are actually using, I think you need some time frame. I don't think a year or two would give you a true picture. So I wonder if waiting until that 5-year period could be a time clock. If the developer or most developers have used this amenity, then we could say, okay, well, maybe this can become a requirement and there's no longer a need for it to be on the amenity list.
Yeah, so, I mean, the idea at the annual performance review, as it's indicated, is that you would look at all of the permits that had been applied for and granted, I guess, at that time. And so you take stock of, like, to what extent the amenities have been used for future, like, upcoming development. So you would have some idea of the potential impact, moving forward.
You will, for sure, but I don't know if that will tell you the actual picture that would necessitate a change in that shorter period of the timeline.
And so maybe one suggestion might be that this might be something that you put in the outline for something to be considered, trends. You know, for the 5 to 7 year review, part of that is looking at the annual reports and seeing trends through 5 to 7 years and dealing with that. So if there's a trend in one amenity or other, that kind of thing, or just maybe some more review on that score, on what those performance measures look like.
Yeah, so I mean, you may decide not to make a change when you do that deeper review. I'm just saying, I'm just asking for a threshold that would say this warrants deeper review.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Agreed. I do agree with Commissioner Morris. So I think you will need some time window to have the data to make some sort of a conclusive recommendation. So certainly would agree with you on that one, Commissioner Walton.
Mine's much. I think it's a yes or no answer. On the building heights and the max size, the base and the max, we redid this to make sure it included everything, correct? So nothing would go on top of that. It was the 15, 15, and the mechanical. It's all included in that number.
Just to be clear, the amended land use charts on starting on pages 58
yeah.
have the either 15% or 10% included in it, so it's different in different zones. So those are included. It does not have the mechanical equipment.
Doesn't have the mechanical.
So if it is the will of the commission, we can change the so-called max building height to be inclusive of the mechanical, and then explain that that height, that maximum height, needs to include the mechanical equipment.
Yeah, because I thought we did
yeah.
that.
Yeah, we included one of the two. We included the 15%. That was the larger of the numbers, but the mechanical equipment is still reading through the supplements to the dimensional chart for the mechanical equipment. It typically
yeah,
doesn't.
It's one-stop shopping, uh-huh. so that somebody can look at this and see what it means. If they're moving in next door, you know, they won't know that it's never going to change in the future because those things happen. But yeah. they could at least know how it's going to be until a big
right.
overhaul happens.
So I think the direction we heard from Commissioner Carlson was we should amend these to be inclusive of everything, and then.
I just wanted to clarify because
yep.
I thought it was already
yeah,
in there.
Yeah, I thought it was done too, so I was a little surprised. That
yeah,
that
just the 15% was included in those.
Yeah.
The mechanical is still separate.
Yeah.
So then okay. I echo Commissioner Carlson.
Uh-huh.
No hidden fees.
We can do that. I think we want to be really clear that that mechanical height is really of a different nature. It's non-habitable space. We do want it to be enclosed for aesthetic purposes, but it's not like the other height, which is essentially habitable space, and it tends to be the full floor plate. The mechanical tends to be a smaller floor plate, just enough to enclose the mechanical equipment itself, which is that's why it was left out as kind of a different factor. So
it's true, but it affects the landscape, and it affects views.
Yes. So we can do that. We'll just make clear that that last increment is a different kind of height, but understood.
I think we just want to paint worst case scenario. This is it.
Highest
case scenario. This is it, and if it meets it, great, and if not, then, you know, that's the worst case.
Okay, so just so that I'm clear, so for instance with, I'm just looking at, maximum height, let's say the maximum height is 250, then, and we know that the mechanical height is 20 feet, we put in there that it's 270. Is that what you're
correct.
Understanding? Okay.
Correct.
And that mechanical equipment is.
Yeah.
Right, and mechanical equipment is included in that.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I just wanted to make sure that we weren't talking about 250 rather than.
Nope, we're talking
no, we're not carving it out.
We're actually
270
adding.
With
okay.
an asterisk to see what the
got
point
it.
Is.
Got it.
Thank you.
Thank
so
you.
So again, just to be all very, very clear. So what that will mean is that, which totally we will follow through, but so everybody knows what the number will look like. For a number that's today 250, it would become 250 plus 15%, which is 288 plus 20 feet. 288 plus 20 is 308. So that's what the number would look like.
That's right.
Yeah.
Both factors will be included.
Yeah.
So
thank
in
you.
Which case, then comparing it to the old code is going to be, it's going to look like we made a lot of changes. So I hope the people hearing this are understanding that you can't compare, with this change, you won't be able to compare
mm-hmm.
apples to apples anymore related to height. So when you look at the change, it's going to be because everything got included.
Yeah,
because
okay,
you didn't have it included before.
So
the baggage fees are shown now and the meal.
What?
The baggage fees and the meal show.
Exactly.
Right.
So I want to make sure that this is what you want, and I'm pretty sure it is. So in that footnote, it would say the highest 20 feet is for mechanical equipment only, and then that it's not habitable space.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what
you
clarify okay. that?
Or just
yeah.
you know, includes 20 feet for mechanical equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And if ever there were a magic time where mechanical went somewhere else than on top, you can't build up to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good clarification. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm told that apparently folks, including myself, aren't speaking close enough to the mic. Just a quick reminder, we're having trouble recording this, so just if you would move the mics closer. So back to you, Commissioner Lang. I think you had some other topics as well.
Sure. Hopefully these are, we'll call them not controversial, but important. Okay, so I have raised this issue of the build-to line, this definition of build-to line, from the start. And the problem with it, it says, you know, a location along a designated block or right-of-way where a building must be constructed. The build-to line is the back of the required sidewalk unless, upon the request of the applicant, it is designated otherwise by the director. And I'm not sure if you curtsy when you make that request or what the actual criteria would be for the director to make that, but I can tell you that a standardless standard is not a lawful standard, and if it just leaves it solely within discretion, it's not. So I'm looking at that, and that is on page 27 of our packet, and I would also note that on page 53, which are dimensional requirements in 2025A060 subsection A subsection 1, the last sentence says buildings are built to the build-to line, which is either the property line or the right-of-way line unless otherwise determined by the director. So again, we have the same problem here. So what I would recommend is that we actually take a Seattle-esque approach, and bear with me for a moment. So in the city of Seattle, when you look at their zoning designations, some of them have this little hyphen and a P after them, and the P stands for like pedestrian-oriented overlay. And then under the P, the city of Seattle, bless them, has listed all of the streets in the city for which you have to comply with the pedestrian overlay. I think that we need to list at a minimum the types of streets, because we have this hierarchy of street types, and I bet you Mr. King could point me to it quickly. Here we are, right-of-way designations on page 26, mm-hmm. which are in 2025A010 subsection B, subsection, I guess, like 4 and 5. And 5 talks about rights-of-way, pedestrian, high streets, commercial streets, mixed streets, neighborhood streets, and perimeter streets. You kind of see that?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that what we need to do is provide very clear, not within the director's discretion, say, if you are on for example, a high street, this is where you're going to build it. And if you're on, maybe it's a commercial street, that's the case too. And maybe it's this case for all of them. But this should not be a discretionary thing where one comes in and doesn't know whether one has to build to that point and has to ask permission. And then there is absolutely nothing in the entire code that says whether or on what basis the director might grant that request. So I would change the build-to line to specifically refer to the types of streets for which the build-to line is applicable. And if it's all of them, then I would say that there needs to be some very clear code in here that says upon what basis the director may or shall grant that request. And I leave it to my fellow commissioners. My general sense is this type of a requirement may make absolute sense when you're talking about like Bellevue Way and, you know, some of the core stuff. It may not make as much sense, bless you, in other parts of downtown. But I don't, that could be an evening discussion within itself. And so my just suggestion is we either make some recommendation to the council on that it applies in certain instances, or we make some recommendation that the director can only, you know, has to grant the request on a showing of something or whatever it is. And I leave it to my fellow commissioners to sort of make a suggestion there.
Commissioner Lang?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm Liz Stead, and I am actually the land use director that would be making some
Excellent.
Of these decisions. And I'd just like to take one moment to address why we had some flexibility written into the code. And certainly your discretion, we can change that. The discretion in the code is written in to allow us to have some flexibility to allow people to pull their buildings back from the sidewalk periodically, to provide space for an outdoor cafe, to provide space for the outdoor plazas, and so on. If we have a strict interpretation of the code that the building must be at the build-to line for 100% of its facade, we would not be able to accommodate some of the open spaces that residents have told us that they appreciate in the downtown. So it allows us to provide some relief while still trying to keep most of the buildings at the sidewalks so we can keep that livability that we're looking for. So there was some intentionality in providing that.
Thank you, Ms. Dead. I fully appreciate that. The problem is it basically doesn't say if, when, or how that decision is going to be made. And if, not you, of course, but if 20 years from now and we haven't changed the code then, we have some arbitrary and capricious director who's like, yeah, it's just not going to cut it. You don't get to do that. There's nothing in the code that says the director can't do that, and I have a problem with that. And I also have a problem with the idea that a developer might want to come in and do exactly what you've discussed, and because there's nothing in here that provides any standard, if you don't like the design as the director, you just say, I'm not going to let you do that. And I think that that's problematic. So I think that we need to come up with something so that we don't have a standardless standard here. I appreciate the desire to have some level of flexibility, and I see the intent here, but this is unbridled discretion, and I think we need to take care of it. So I'm open to suggestions from my fellow commissioners.
Well, no, I agree, and I appreciate the flexibility. I understand why that's there. I think the theme that we're trying to get to is so anybody can pick up the code and understand what the rules are, whether it's a citizen, a developer. I think that's what we're just trying to get to is what are the rules? So if you're going to allow flexibility, what's some of that criteria so I don't know what the verbiage would be. I like the flexibility, but what are the rules? Because, you know, many people are looking at it to make financial decisions way ahead, and, you know, it could be a year or two, and they just want to know what the rules are. So I'm open to what it should be, and I'm flexible. I like the flexibility, but I think we need to have the game rules in there somehow so people know what they can do or not do.
Just one thing to tag on to this in terms of the clarity is if positions were to change in between a project that spans two different directors could wind up with a huge financial burden based on somebody's what was in somebody's mind that wasn't written down versus what decision someone else would make. So the more clarity would help with that.
What we could potentially look at to get at some of the concerns you're talking about is looking at some of the design guidelines and how we could provide some further information about when it would be appropriate for some sort of deviation from the build-to line, and that may be a location to put that in.
Thank you. Back to you, Pushley.
Well, maybe it could just read something, for example, like I'm just totally ad hoc here, right? Buildings are built to the build-to line, which is either the property line or the right-of-way line, except where a plaza, building modulation, or other ground-level open space is proposed. And that puts it right back on the developer to design that in, and it says where you've proposed to do those things, you don't have to build it to the building line. Do you see what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
It makes sense. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
It seems to me, again, from a naive perspective, if the builder had the flexibility to bring back the build-to line, that's goodness in terms of less footprint, isn't it? So why would we want to restrict this? Meaning, if they're going to pull back the line, it's more open space. It's just more. Less building.
Right. No, yes. I agree with you fully. Like we want what I think that the city is concerned about is that you could end up having essentially like you think about a nice sort of walkable urban thing where you're walking along, you're doing the window shopping and all these types of good things. If all of a sudden you could pull that building back like 6 feet and put, you know, landscaping or something else in there, you start to create a separation there and possibly a barrier, and so then you don't have that sort of connection, you know, that pedestrian connection to what's going on inside the store. So I understand it. What I just want to be in a position of is that as Commissioner Hillhorst put it, you know, a person of ordinary whatever could just look at this and say, I can come in and design a building and I know that I complied with the code And I'm not waiting for the director to tell me, like, well, you know, I really want you to do this, or I really want you to do that, or I don't want you to do that at all. On your site, I actually don't want you to have anything there. I just want a flat facade right up against the back of the sidewalk. And so I understand the intent and the flexibility, but I think that what we should do is just provide some examples of things that you can do in your design as a property owner developer that would allow you to retreat from the build-to line. And so I think if the idea is to allow, like, outdoor seating, maybe some a plaza, could be, you know, landscaping or art or these types of things, I think that if we just start listing those things, you say, you know, you shall build to the build-to line except for where you are providing those types of things, then I think that that just tells them, like, hey, I can design a little plaza in the front of my building. But as written, it says, I could design that plaza. Maybe Ms. Stead says, that's an awesome plaza. And to Vice Chair Walter's point, there's a change in director, and the next director's like, death to plazas, you know, and that's it. So, and there's nothing in the code that says they couldn't do that. So I'm just, I
understand.
I'm,
thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. So I think we have a proposal in terms of the definition. So feedback, or we could just go with Commissioner Lang's input. I think lots of heads nodding, so I think we'll go with Commissioner Lang's feedback to you. Thank you.
All right. Next thing, and I just flagged this. I recognize that we're going to probably have more of a discussion about this in light of Mr. Stroh's comments, which, by the way, Mr. Stroh, I really appreciated you coming out and saying, hey, you know, we respectfully disagree with the commission about the 10% open space. I would just flag that on page 32, the bottom, under the master development plan, the outdoor plaza space is still listed in there. And so if we do go through with our with the Planning Commission's current recommendation that subsection B sub A sub Roman numeral 5 will probably need to be stricken. I've got some changes here in this section, which is the review required. It talks about applicable review. One just general change is it refers throughout this whole section, which is 2025A030, it talks about design review, but it's kind of confusing because I'll just read like a sentence. It says, the director shall not approve the design review unless the master development plan is amended to include those elements. That's just one thing. To me, it should say design review permit, because what you're getting is a permit, and it's just, I don't know why, but it's just kind of odd to me. You don't get a design review. You go through design review. I don't know if that makes sense to people, but what you're seeking is a permit or entitlement from that. And I think it makes things just read a little bit better if you say it's a design review permit. And the section that it refers to, the procedural section, which I believe is in LUC 2030, speaks of a permit. So I just suggest that we put the word permit in there. Within the substantive code here, the effective approval section, it says approval of the design review, and I think it should say design review permit, and then I think in that it says and the master development plan, well, that would suggest that you also got a master development plan, and then it says and any development agreement where required. I think that what it should say is approval of the design review permit, the master development plan, and or any development agreement where required shall constitute, and it says the regulations governing development. And it's an odd thing because I think the regulations are really the code, but the terms and conditions of the approved permit are really what governs the development. So I don't know if I would use the word regulations there. I might say terms and conditions, you know, governing the development. Does that make sense to people? And this is, I know this sounds like nerdy and stuff, but you're not really creating regulations. Now, there's an argument that you're creating regulations through a council-approved development agreement, but when staff is administratively issuing a master development plan or a design review permit, all they're doing is approving a permit that is presumably consistent with the adopted regulations. It's not creating regulations. That a building permit application has to be consistent with that is fine, but it's consistent with the terms and conditions. So I I know it sounds like nerdy, but I think that there's something important there. And you're going to see a little bit more why as I get into, if I may, continue. Does anybody have any issue with that or understand what my concern is there?
Could you explain again where you are?
I'm on page 32 of the packet, 2025A030, subsection A, and I'm in A2, the very first sentence.
Okay, thank you.
The next section is the master development plan, and I just point out, you know, just to emphasize, like, the issue that I had, the definitional, in this same paragraph, it refers both to site development and the project limit. So, again, interchangeably, I think we've got that fixed. Minor capitalization thing on the bottom of page 33, I think design review permit needs to be in that last sentence and capitalized. Here's where things get kind of interesting, and this is getting into the council stuff. Looking at the departures, first in the administrative departures, I would just point out that in that section under D sub B in the decision criteria, there's, like, again, we've talked about, like, the lowercase code issue, but I would just reiterate that this is especially important to understand, like, what our terms are. And then in subsection Roman numeral 5 there, it says, through a development agreement with the city. I would strike with the city because that's clearly who it's through. But I would put the word approved there. So it should, that sentence should, the end of it should be allowed through a development agreement approved pursuant to, you know, the next section. Okay, the next section, and I've raised this before, this used to be called legislative council departures or legislative departures. Now it's called city council departures, and I think you could even just call it council departures. We still see the word legislative on the top of page 35, and so where it starts to read at the top of 35, this subsection is to provide a legislative departure process. I would strike the word legislative, and it should say this subsection is to provide a departure. And what I'm concerned about is that the next language, process to foster adaptive reuse of a building that existed as of the date of the adoption of the code, and that same provision below. To me, this is facial spot zoning. If we are saying that our city council, and I think that the downtown residents should perk up their ears on this, if we are saying that our city council can enter into a development agreement with a single property owner and allow them to use a prohibited use that is not allowed anywhere else in downtown, not allowed anywhere else in that zone, in their building for adaptive reuse, you might get something that you really weren't expecting to be your next door neighbor. And it could actually be worse than a height increase. I believe that this is not consistent, and I'm not here to give legal advice, but my read of RCW 3670B180, which is the state enabling legislation for development agreements, is that it basically says development agreements shall be consistent with the adopted development regulations. In other words, you're not using a development agreement to create regulations. You're entering into agreement consistent with the regulations. So I would strike that language that says a process to foster adapted reuse of the building that existed as of the adoption. I just strike that out, and I would strike out subsection A sub Roman numeral I, which is this whole idea of using a development agreement to basically put a use in a building that your neighbor can't do, even though they're in the same zone, and is actually a prohibited use in the zone. And maybe I need to bring a motion on that, but I
don't think you need a motion.
Very strongly concerned about this.
I think I don't see any, I think see heads nodding, so I think we're good to.
Well, everybody's falling asleep.
My strategy is working.
I do want to pause in a bit, Commissioner Lang, and maybe go around the table once again.
Yeah.
And give other commissioners a chance as well, too.
Good spot.
Okay. This is a good time to.
You.
All right. Commissioner Lang, please, yeah?
So I'm going to change topics maybe a little bit here on the items that I have written down. So one thing, I want to go to the tower spacing. So my understanding is,
one of the last meetings where I wasn't in attendance, the commission landed on the 60-foot tower spacing. So my question is, could we possibly create some kind of amenity or a motivator for developers who create 80-foot tower spacing? So 60 was now the norm, and we heard feedback that didn't work for everybody, but we also heard feedback that some developers were okay with the 80-foot tower spacing. So I'd like to create a carrot, because I think if we can motivate people to do that standard, I think it's a win for a lot of the people downtown with the light, the space, and the views and everything like that. So I don't want to change 60, but I'd like to give an incentive for 80 if we could create something like that. So that would be one thing that I would like to see that, you know, we don't have time necessarily to talk about tonight, but however, we need to do that in the recommendation of the transmittal.
Yeah, that could be something that we could put in your transmittal to council and
okay.
allow staff to develop some options for their consideration.
Okay. Yes.
Commissioner Hillhorst, would you envision that maybe as being like something that would be put into like the amenity bonus table where you might actually earn more FAR by narrowing up your building?
Sure. I'm open to something like that. Absolutely. Right. So whatever it is, but something to give a carrot to motivate. The other thing I wanted to ask Mr. Stroh is just going to the 10%, and I also thank you for telling us that this wasn't something that you agreed with, so we could have the discussion, so thank you for doing that. So taking the 10% out, I think myself and maybe some of the other commissioners, I think we were taking the 10% out for the open space because we wanted to talk about doing maybe a park impact fee, and instead of 10% that was just kind of random open spaces, which I think some of that already gets fulfilled in the design elements, if I understand some of the open spaces. I think there was a thought of if we did some kind of park impact fee, we could pool it and have a more cohesive and planned out park amenity for the downtown residents. So I just wanted to ask your thoughts on that, if let you know kind of where my mind was going and maybe one of my other commissioners of why we took out the 10% is we kind of wanted to change how you got open space and make it more cohesive, where I think if there's a big park or a big amenity, I feel more people will use that versus just kind of open spaces at, you know, different buildings along the way. That was my thought process that I want to open up with you.
Well, thanks for the dialogue. The open space certainly is one of the really important things to a dense urban environment, and certainly super important to livability. So the focus on open space is something we've struggled with, and there are areas where you see where dense urban developments occurred where open space has not been a major consideration, and it's really not as livable an environment. In this case, it's kind of a combination of things in terms of how we can achieve the level of open space that we want for downtown. Parks is through capital investments by the city,
mm-hmm.
and park impact fees would be an engine to create more of those capital investments by the city, because you gather essentially from every development some amount of contribution towards essentially that public open space park system. In this case, we don't know whether a park impact fee will be ultimately something the council would look favorably on or not, and it would take quite a while to set it up. So the thought at this point is, at least for buildings that are going to essentially be higher, and at the time that, and take advantage of additional height, and at the time that those code considerations are being adopted, to be sure that there is some offset there in terms of the impact of that additional height, that this would be a good time to make sure that the promise of that open space accompanying the additional height was captured at the same time. Mm-hmm. And you might say it could be that in the transmittal to the council, if you were to adopt the 10% open space applicable to the higher buildings using new height, mm-hmm. you might say in your transmittal, Planning Commission actually really thinks open space is really important, and were we to adopt a citywide park impact fee, that 10% open space requirement might be better met through that other mechanism if the council were to do that, and at which point we might recommend that at that point you amend the code back and not have that 10% open space requirement tied to new buildings. But But at this point in the matter before you, which is the code, what you actually are making recommendations on and directly affect the additional height is something that would be adopted with this code package, so the opportunity to offset that is right in front of you right now. And we wanted to make sure that the dialogue about that additional height resulting in more open space and more slender buildings actually was captured in some way in the actual code language.
Okay. So however we need to put that in the recommendation, that we think we would like the council to talk about how to get that open space through the 10%, through the park fee, that's a recommendation to find what's the best way to get open space, but open space that will be used, right? I mean, that is what I think is really important. We know parks will get used. I don't know if an open space necessarily at a plaza will get used as much as a park. Let me just say that. So however we need to transmit that they know our thought process and have that discussion. So thank you for that. The other thing, actually, you gave me a great intro there, but one of the discussions we had at the last commission meeting that was a few meetings ago is we talked about the floor plates and the decrease as you go up. And what was pointed out is that 10% reduction really wasn't going to get the skinnier, the taller, skinnier. I don't know if we need to still have a discussion of what that floor plate size needs to be if you go higher to actually make a difference of showing it skinnier. So I think I'm looking at you, Dan, but I'm kind of looking on the side too because I don't know if we really finished that conversation. And I know we still maybe have to have a height conversation, but do you feel that you have that direction or do we need to finish that? So help me, guys.
I'm still lacking clarity on how we get skinnier buildings. And I did a little schematic of what the downtown 01 would be and in terms of height, floor plate, and it doesn't get skinnier buildings for non-residential. Residential goes skinnier, but non-residential just get taller. So, and that's, you're looking puzzled.
What I would like to learn more a bit about the non-residential, you said not getting skinnier.
Right. Okay, this is something I should have brought in order to hand out. It was just, I started it just for my own understanding, and then I ran out of time, but so current code, non-residential, this is just the downtown 01. The floor plates stay the same size all the way up, current code and proposed code. So it's floor plate of 24,000 at a 300-foot is the current code. And at the proposed code, same floor plate size for 600 feet. Unless I know I did this right. So, but on residential, the floor plate drops to 22,000 above 40 and to 13,500 above 80. So those definitely are getting thinner, which is as intended, but with the downtown 01 non-residential, they don't, unless...
Yeah, in the currently adopted code and the new proposed code, the residential floor plates are always going to be smaller.
Right, and that's the one that I'm saying, that's the example of what we thought we were doing. Mm-hmm. The other one is not what I believed we were intending.
Right, so the... currently in the code for the 01 example that you just stated, if a developer decided to go over 345 feet in the 01, that the floor plates above that height, all the way up to whatever height they ultimately get to, would need to be 10% reduction based on the 24,000 square foot floor plate. So that's
in words somewhere else.
Yeah, that's essentially the notes that reduce the 24,000 square foot floor plate by 10% is what's in
there. Why in this, and then we get to how this is confusing. Mm-hmm. So when I look at it, it just says 24,000, and then above 80 feet it says 24,000. So I have to go above 345 feet and go to somewhere else to see that it goes down 10%, which isn't near the difference as it is for the residential. It's going from 22,000 to 13,500, which is quite a, I can't do the math in my head, but quite a large decrease.
Yeah, for clarification, the two columns you're referring to are the floor plates that would pertain to any building that you were to do, whether or not it exceeds the trigger height or not. So those are the basically the podium sizes as well as the tower sizes. The trigger heights essentially take the part of the building that's above that trigger height and next the building down. So
okay. And see, at this point, having a drawing of what we're talking about, because I have all this in front of me, and you've lost me again. I don't think anybody wants to say that out loud, but it's just really complex. And that, above the trigger height at 10%, I'd have to look at it really hard in an actual building to see that it got thinner. So I'm not thinking we did what we intended based on this and then based on what you said. Also, along trigger height, it's not in the definition, trigger for additional height. And to me, what it is and what those words say, it's not intuitive. It's not making a lot of sense. Can we put that in the definitions in terms of what it does? Okay. I have more things. Should I just go through my...
Well, can we...
Do we want to finish a thought?
Yeah, thank you. Are we going to leave it at the 10%, or are we going to do more? Is that kind of where you were going, Anne?
Well, I was going to expand on your floor plate.
Okay, thank you. I just feel like... Are we done at the 10? Because I feel like we didn't finish the conversation. And
I don't feel like we're done.
Okay.
We're still discussing it, yes.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Anne, if you want to tap onto it.
Well, yeah, I want to tap onto it because the question I have on the floor plate and the clarity I need from staff, I remember from the last meeting, some of the commissioners said to add comments from the Wallace letter onto this version. And I remember the comments from the Wallace letter was to increase the floor plate in some areas. So I'm wondering, and I need clarity from staff, how does that work? Because I see some 30,000 square foot floor plate in the OLB area. How does that work with the 25% increase now that we're allowing between 80 and 150 feet? So what is it? What is our new maximum floor plate now? Because that seems to me, it seems different from when I left the conversation last meeting.
If you refer to page 59 of the code package, the direction we got from the last Planning Commission meeting was to incorporate the changes in the May 10th Wallace Properties letter as well as the May 10th PMF letter. So the things that related to floor plates are in the middle part of page 59, and it relates specifically to the non-residential or office floor plate in the OLB South area, which has the Sheraton site. And again, it's a maximum floor plate over 80 is what's stated in the density chart. And footnote 16, as they proposed, was to allow a 25% increase from 20,000, which essentially gets you up to 25,000 between 80 feet and 150 feet of building height, and they have some rationale for that. So that is the exact wording of the letters that we put in exactly into this code. I would say we did reflect back on how the trigger height discussion works, and I think our interpretation would be we would first and foremost take the 25% increase to get up to 25,000, let that go up to 150 feet height, and then the 10% reduction would occur above 150 feet of building height. So we didn't have a conflict of both increasing things by 25% and reducing them at 10% at the same time. So the trigger height would be essentially above 150 feet in the OLB South.
So the maximum floor plate for non-residential is 30,000 in the OLB.
OLB South, it's 30,000, essentially up to 80 feet. And then once you get above 80 feet to 150 feet, it's 25,000. Mm-hmm. And then when you get above 150 feet, the trigger height would reduce it down to 18,000.
And that 30,000 is different from what we had prior to the Wallace letter.
No, that 30,000 was in there. Again, we're showing every single stripe underline of the public hearing draft.
Okay, just want to make that clear.
Yep,
okay.
The 30,000 has been in there for months.
Okay, yep. Thank you.
Just a quick time check, if I may. We are about 10 minutes past 9. I want to just make sure we get a quick pass-through, and then if we intend to transmit over to the council, I think we may have to move to the next phase of discussion. So, Emma, you had a few more things that you would...
Okay, so... We're still not done with that one conversation, but I'll keep going. So the final question I actually had is, in your presentation earlier, you were talking about the O2 heights, and it was very helpful how you explained that they probably really can't get to where they would. Do you need us to approve that recommendation of what you presented, or do you need something formal? You presented it, but I don't think we took an action or a discussion on it,
per se. That is, I guess, our recommendation to the commission, but your transmittal to council is the Planning Commission's transmittal. So if you want to incorporate that staff idea, you should either accept it or keep it as is in the current draft, which is a taller building height than that.
Okay, so we need to... take action.
So if you want
either way.
If you want to make a motion, we could maybe. Yeah.
Okay, so I can make a motion to accept staff's recommendation of the O2 height that was proposed.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Is it easy?
I just want to make sure we're doing administratively what we need to. Mm-hmm. And then the 10%. What do we want to do on the 10%? I see where you're going. I don't want to lock in on the 10%. I think what I want to present to council is there's a 10% option. There's a park impact fee option. I guess I want to leave it open, but that's me. If everybody else is more decisive on that, then please somebody speak up. I'm just telling you my opinion on it.
So on this one, if I may jump in, and then Commissioner Walter. So we had the Parks Board present to us multiple times. And I certainly don't feel like we addressed their concern or their feedback around the parks and the open space metrics. So I would rather push for a stronger case to say that caveat meeting the parks and open spaces metrics that I would support, you know, the transmittal. But I'm certainly open to other thoughts as well. Please.
That's actually one of my bullet point items. Somehow, in our recommendation to council, we take into account that the Parks Board came to us and they still have some input that they'd like to give, mm-hmm. and we should take those into consideration, even though we need to move forward with a decision tonight on this. But I think in our recommendation to council, we need a bullet point to address that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. In fact, my view is that it should be a very stronger caveat, saying caveat meeting this, you know, that we would approve this one. Commissioner Walter, I think you had something to say as well.
Yes, I did. And first, I'd like to applaud Ann's recommendation to have the Parks Board actually present or give input to the council on parks and open space. And so what I was going to say before Ann raised her hand and was... No, I'm glad you did, because now I'm going to change it based on better information. So I'd like to say that we put in pretty much what Dan proposed, that we do the 10% open space, but strongly recommend, and I want to say we shall institute a park impact fee, but I know I can't word it like that. But I want it to be the strongest language possible that we move in that direction. Because if you take little bits of land,
they're never going to amount to mm-hmm. what a park is and the use that can be done in a park.
Yeah.
They're helpful, but it's not the same as having a park. And the benefits of what could transpire in a park is wonderful. And sometimes open spaces where there's no orchestration of what's happening there can go south, as in Westlake Center did in Seattle, and then they had to put in a whole bunch of programs there to keep it from being... not because it wasn't a park, so it was being used as other things.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So I would say until that time, we do the 10%, but that we'd like to see a park impact fee examined, researched, and acted upon within the shortest amount of time possible. I don't know if we can give time frames. I think it's really important, especially with the growth and the height, and to give back to our downtown residents, both current and future.
Can I make a sort of a point on the 10% though? So I'm not exactly sure if and I'm not seeing this as either or, I think I'm hearing both and. But an argument maybe for the open spaces is that they're more accessible. In the sense that you don't have to walk as far to get to an open space or to just enjoy some non-concrete in the downtown area. So I just want to keep that in mind to make sure that we are looking at both and, not just centralized parks where you might have to walk.
Walking is good for you.
Not everybody can walk that far. So that's when I say accessible, I mean some people can't walk that far. And so this is easier. It's easier for them to also enjoy some non-concrete with this. Spread out a little bit more. Yep.
So I think Commissioner Lang, yes, please.
So I become less concerned about this idea, especially in light of my well-documented concerns about the height increases, as long as we do one of the things which is in the BDA recommendation letter this evening, which is we set the new base height or trigger or whatever we're calling that thing to 90% of whatever the new max is. I don't care that the OLB is 70 feet now and we're proposing it. We don't set that and then we try to tax them for the next 200 feet when everybody else is only getting taxed on the next 20 feet. I think that Commissioner Morisseau's point is really well taken, and I think Mr. Stroh's kind of talk about the, you know, ensuring that if there isn't a park impact fee adopted or if it isn't adopted for some time, you know, this allows to see some level of, if you will, mitigation or amelioration of some of the added height. My concern is that this be a level playing field for everybody in downtown. And that means that just like with the FAR issue that we discussed and dealt with months ago, that we set that base FAR at 90% of the the trigger height for providing, and I'm not saying other things like, hey, I want to see it slimmer and all the rest of that, and I'm still not thrilled about the heights, and I may talk about that at length if you're not careful. But I would just say that we need to set that base height at basically 90% of whatever then the proposed max is, so that we at least have a level playing field across downtown.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So I believe we have closure on that one. So
we
I
did
don't
the 90%.
See,
yeah.
Did we? We did 90% far.
We did far, but
height.
Not height.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
And this is triggered. This is tied to the height, and we have these wide variations in the tables about what the trigger height is. And I'm just saying, let's just level the playing field, just like we got a letter from Mr. Bannon. For the record, I don't represent the BDA, but in the BDA letter at the bottom it says, and these are recommendations, it says base height for each district at 90% of the proposed maximum for amenity calculation, maxing the met there. Maybe I misunderstood that. Did I misunderstand that, Mr.? Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. So, is that mine or yours?
That's mine.
So, I want to again go back and make a quick time check, but about almost 20 past 9. So, back to you, Mr. Stroh, in terms of how we get to closure over the next few minutes.
Okay, great. So, I think we're still looking for direction on the 10% open space, and so just in terms of getting direction on that one, staff will be looking for a motion from one of the members of the commission on that one. And then the issue of the the new base for height is a very significant issue. So that probably will require some discussion. And when the commission is ready, staff would really be pleased to be able to join in and provide some perspective and thoughts on that.
Okay. So then on the 10%, so clearly we have to make a formal recommendation. So I would solicit a motion from any of the commissioners at this point.
I would like to make a motion,
please,
to maintain 10% open space until such time as a park impact fee is adopted, enacted.
Do we have a second?
May we comment, or do I have to wait?
You need to just second, and then you can open for discussion.
Well, that's assuming I agree with everything that's said. So at what point?
You can second and qualify.
You can second just means it's worth worth the attention, worth the discussion.
Okay. It doesn't mean you're
so I'd like to second. I don't know that I want to make it this restrictive to the park impact fees. Mm. I want that to be addressed. I don't know if this is the place for it to be addressed. But I would rely on my fellow commissioners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So instead of maybe saying exactly, instead of saying park impact fee, another revenue source, you want it more generic, another revenue source to create parks or open space? Is that kind of where you're going?
Well, I think address this so staff can move on with the 10% open space and then find another way to address the park. I don't want to use the word issue.
Would that
the
be
park.
Acceptable to you, Commissioner Walter?
No. Park impact fee can only be used for parks and wouldn't be cut in downturns and those types of things. It would be set aside and create parks. I just came back from New York City and I saw this wonderful Central Park all the way down the center of Manhattan. That land has got to be unbelievably valuable, but they can't touch it for anything else, and it makes New York City livable. And they also have small parks in lots of different places. So I feel really strongly that we need parks downtown, especially if we continue to see residences being added in downtown, plus people going places on their lunch hour, et cetera, et cetera. So, but I'm only one, so now you know how I feel.
I agree with Commissioner Moore, Walters, that we need to address the park thing. I'm not saying that I'm against that. I just don't know that this is the place for it. In addition, I remember when the park board came to us and with the definition of open space, does open space constitute park? I don't think that was finalized.
Correct. So they are still working on this, and you're absolutely correct. But I would say this is probably a good place to raise this up, and I do concur with Commissioner Walter. So we have a motion on the table. Do we have a second?
Well, we already got the second. I think we're in discussion right now before we go for a vote.
Let's see where we are then. All those in favor say aye.
Well, but if we go for a vote, then that closes discussion. And I think there's still some open discussion, or at least I have a comment.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. I'll hold off. Thank you.
So I think the one thing I would like to change is that it, whatever it is, whether it's an impact fee or what have you, I don't think we want to get rid of the 10%. Open space. So I would change the language so that it's not until the park impact fee, until we get a park impact fee. But we still keep the 10% open space. Maybe priority shifts a little bit or something, but I don't think we want to get rid of the 10%.
My only worry is that if we go forward with the 10% and the recommendation and ask council to discuss and review, that it could be added on top of the 10%, right? And I don't know if I want to layer fees. I kind of wanted one way to do it. Does that make sense? That's my only concern, is we're just going to put more.
Well, perhaps the park impact fee could be used towards open space, where it would be prioritized towards creating the parks in the north part and the south part. And then once those are done, it can be open space.
So can I ask a question? So part of what this gets us is, like, so let's say land D decreases, the amount of land available decreases, like for the city to use, right? This still allows open space to be established on private development land, right?
Yeah, this simply ensures that there's a publicly accessible open space that's created, that's carved out of the ground floor of a building that goes to this higher height. In terms of having adequate space for parks elsewhere, parks would have to be publicly acquired, and there are locations we'd have to determine about where to do that. There are some areas that are identified in the comprehensive plan and sub-area plan for new parks with the idea that the parks be, and they're larger pieces that are spread out in the downtown, so there are some deficits of where we'd like to see those, and hopefully we can address those in this more coordinated way down the road with public places. Staff has I hope not presented these publicly accessible open spaces as public parks, but they do have a significant amenity value in terms of being able to get out, get some fresh air, experience a place. They have to be designed in such a way that they're attractive places for people to actually visit and want to be using as open spaces. But they're not actually parks. They're there's something that is an important open space amenity, though, is the thought.
Lovely. The impression I got from the presentation from the Parks Board was that they're less than parks. And in part because they don't come under the rubric of the Parks Department. But if people go to relax and enjoy at, you know, a plaza that happens to be, you know, privately owned but publicly accessible, then that's a de facto park. You know, that is a good thing to have. And so I would like us to keep our eye on the big picture rather than simply say, you know, open space that is controlled by the Bellevue Parks Department. Let's focus on having open space with publicly available amenities for people to enjoy regardless of whether they're public or private.
Yep.
Commissioner Lang, I think you had a comment.
So my concern is this. The trigger height, the impact of the trigger height in this 10% rule sort of varies significantly depending where your property is. And I'll just give an example. I'm just going to compare the OLB Central and OLB South respectively with the downtown mixed-use Civic Center and the downtown mixed-use. So OLB Central, the maximum height right now is 403 feet, and I think that that's sort of like all in, right, like the, you know, bags, fees, blah, 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 as we've discussed earlier. And the trigger height for non-residential is at 90 feet, whereas for the same height in the downtown mixed use in the Civic Center, it's at 115 feet. So that's another 25 feet or like 2.5 stories. And if you think about that in terms of FAR, that could be more or less like 2 FAR that you get before you have to put this in. Then you look at the residential height in the downtown mixed use at 400 feet, that trigger height doesn't kick in until 230 feet, whereas it's proposed for residential in the downtown OLB at 105 feet. And this stands out to me in particular because the basic unanimous recommendation of the CAC was to extend the downtown mixed use zoning to the OLB. So what we've done here is with this new OLB zoning, we have sort of a lot of the characteristics in terms of height and other things, but there is a vast disparity right there. If you were to build the exact same building across the street, you would have to start kicking in that 10% open space if you're doing a residential project at 125 feet lower just across the street. And I don't see how that has any, there's no basis, there's no rational basis to have that type of a disparity. And then, for example, with the OLB South, if you compared it to the downtown mixed use, for non-residential, the max height with downtown mixed use is 230, which is the same. So 230 is still the max height, but you've got, again, 90 feet versus 115 feet, and again, you have 105 versus 230 feet. And again, you build the exact, I mean, literally, you could even hire the same architect. build the exact same building across the street, but you're doing this and actually in the downtown mixed use, you're doing this in two instances where you haven't even met the definition of a tower under the code that we're proposing. So what I'm saying is, let's at least, if we're not going to go, and I kind of saw people sort of avoid eye contact with me, always a good policy. If we're not going to go with this 90% rule that the BDA has proposed, which I think is just becomes, you know, sort of simple and fair across all zones, at a minimum, I would accept a friendly, if Commissioner Walter would accept a friendly amendment, I'd be willing to go down this path as long as we, at a minimum, equalized those trigger heights for these OLB zones so that they're at least the same as the same doggone thing across the street.
Yes.
Okay? So what my friendly amendment would be is for the downtown OLB Central, for the non-residential, the trigger height would be 115 feet, and for the residential, it'd be 230 feet. And also in the downtown OLB South, the trigger height would be 115 for non-residential and 230 for residential. Would you accept that friendly amendment?
Certainly.
All right, so with the amendment, then, let's take a quick vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Wait, does that include the amendment that is the
friendly? It's a friendly amendment.
Sorry, no, not that part. To the language where it doesn't exclude the open spaces. Because you said the original motion was to only do it until you have a park impact fee.
Correct.
And I was asking
correct, yes.
for it not to be an either or, but a both and.
Correct.
That we don't get rid of the 10%.
I will defer to Commissioners Lang and Walter to clarify for us.
Yeah. So the friendly amendment was slightly different than the original.
So here's the problem with making it both a 10% and an impact fee. Under state law, you can't be required to mitigate the same impact twice. And so if you're being required to pay an impact fee and provide the open space to mitigate the impact of that extra height, you're mitigating it twice. So I am uncomfortable with the and.
Commissioner Walter, can I suggest that you withdraw your motion so we take that everything off the table? Aaron, you introduce a motion that incorporates what Stephanie wanted along with your friendly amendment.
Yeah, but I so wanted it to be mine.
I want it to be hers.
Because we have a bunch.
You're right.
We have a bunch of amendments now.
Mine was tongue in cheek. I'm totally good with this.
I think in the interest of closure, yes, we'll give it to Commissioner Lang. Well, thank you.
So do you withdraw your motion?
Stephanie, do you withdraw your motion?
I withdraw my motion.
Okay. Now I have to show I was paying attention. Okay. I move that we reintroduce the 10% open space requirement per staff's recommendation for the trigger heights and amend the downtown OLB Central and downtown OLB South trigger heights so that the non-residential trigger height for each is 115 feet and the residential trigger height for each is 230 feet.
Second.
There we go.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. There we go. Thank you, Commissioner Lang. Thank you, Commissioner Lang. Dan, I think we have closure on that one, but for you.
Great. Okay. So it seems like we have two issues before us still. One is back to the floor plate issue, the reduced floor plate above the trigger height. And right now the code stands that there's a 10% reduction. We've had some discussion earlier tonight and in previous meetings as to whether that's adequate and whether that's the right number. So if you'd like to discuss that further, we can do so. And if not, it would stay with the 10% reduction that's currently in the draft code package.
Let's just pause for a couple of minutes. Go on the table. Commissioner Lang?
Okay. So I've been the one that has been, like, poking the bear, so to speak, on this. And I've spent an awful long time, and I meant it when I spoke earlier, talking to other downtown stakeholder interests who very much want the additional height and very much want the flexibility to design a building and have assured me that, don't worry, we'll still get taller, slender buildings. I haven't heard anything that makes me believe that that's going to happen. And I understand the desire to have flexibility. that's kind of one of the things that I advocate for maybe strongest, like, you know, as a private property land use attorney. It's like, trust my clients to do right. Trust my clients to build something beautiful. They're invested in the rest of it. But I have felt really strongly throughout this process that it is disingenuous for us to start the discussion on a discussion on saying something that we will get taller, slender buildings, and yet there's nothing in the code that actually requires that outcome for using this additional height. And so I don't have a solution, and I've made it clear as I've spoken before that I don't want to be saying what the solution should be, because I think what happens is it becomes the whack-a-mole thing with the tower separation, where we create another problem that's worse than the solution and all that. And so what I will say is I do not support with the – and I'm going to leave it alone with what we've already moved unanimously with regard to the O2 South, how's that? The O2 South tonight. But I want it to be, I want the record to reflect that I do not support any of the additional height increases in the downtown, with the exception of the modest increase that was proposed for the perimeter district and what has been proposed for the OLB, because those were two things that were well discussed, thoroughly discussed at the CAC level, and were unanimously recommended at the CAC level. The CAC only, and I say this somewhat blushingly as the co-chair, the CAC punted on really a deep discussion on looking at these additional heights in other portions of downtown. And I don't want my fellow commissioners here to feel like you also need to punt, but I'm pretty uncomfortable with kind of where we are right now.
Well, to clarify, did you reject them or
no.
Did you punt?
We generated information, and there's all these nice massing diagrams and stuff in the transmittal. And we said, Planning Commission, you should explore this further. And what we've explored a little bit is some additional height. But what we haven't explored, and again, and I'm sure I've got people in this room, fellow land use attorneys and others, are probably shocked to hear me say it, but what I don't see in here is anything prescriptive that actually requires that if you're going to go from 400 feet to 600 feet, that you actually build that taller, slender building. So I will say this just as a follow-up. Commissioner Hillhorst earlier mentioned this idea of we have the tower separation at 60 feet, and we find an incentive to get them to try to open that up even more. I'm always a carrot is better than a stick kind of guy. In this instance, I'm not totally convinced a stick isn't a better approach, but I'm pretty open to the idea that if we can really strongly encourage that opening up, that maybe that type of a carrot becomes what will result in that outcome. But I don't want to create my difficulty is I know my box as a legal professional. I'm not here to design somebody's building. You let me do that, and you know. So
thank you, Commissioner Lang. I think you opened up a couple of topics now. So certainly we need to give staff obviously our recommendations. So any other commissioners with that perspective on this?
Well, I guess the recommendation we have to make is to stay with the 10%, or do we want to increase it, right? I mean, it's...
To make it more than 10%.
To make it more than 10%. So I guess I'd open the floor. Is 10% fine? I mean, we know the visual of 10%. Do we want to entertain a 20%, a 50%? Does anybody want to go smaller to hopefully achieve that taller, slender building? So... that's what we have to direct staff on doing, 10% or something else.
Well, I would say anything less than 20 would be imperceptible. I would recommend 25% as a starting point for discussion.
That seems fair.
Somebody have a different number?
Can you give me like a rough idea of what that would look like? Maybe an existing building that has sort of a...
Well, it'd be 2.5 times what it was in the slide.
Is that 25% plus the additional parking space? Plus the additional...
It's separate from the tower spacing.
This is right.
Yeah, the 10% is at ground floor, and this is a 25% reduction as it goes taller.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So in the sky.
So can we? Yeah, there you go.
So, yeah, so as we
so Jeremy, that's 10%.
Yeah, as we've looked at this,
double.
Some observations were that, as Commissioner Walter noted, the office floor plates are naturally larger. I think the market wants to deliver 20 by 20.
The market generally wants to be delivering 24,000 square foot floor plates. So a 10% reduction, as we're noting here, takes you down to 21,600. If you were to go with a 25% reduction, would be a reduction of 6,000 square feet, so that would take you down to an 18,000 square foot floor plate above that trigger height, just for order of magnitude. So we're, I think, as Commissioner Lang noted, we want to do a reduction that does result in taller, more slender, but there's also just market dynamics that do want certain size floor plates as well. So that's the tension there.
And Commissioner Lang, thank you.
Yeah.
There was no CAC point of view on this, as far as you can.
No, I mean, the conversations going back 4 years ago were things like, well, you know, maybe if we let somebody have extra height, or maybe if we increase the height, we could have an iconic skyline. That was one of the things. And there was a concern about, like, we don't want everything to kind of just look like a well-trimmed lawn where everything's kind of the same. And, so there were some of these concepts that were being floated. But there's not anything right now in this draft that actually requires somebody to do that. And so, like, among the conversations that I've had with stakeholders who are very much in favor of having the flexibility that this extra height would provide, they say, well, listen, you know, as a practical mathematical matter, you start stretching the building up, you're going to have to go narrower because your FAR is going to disappear very quickly. And so you may recall, like, I'm doing math. I did the square root of 18,000. It's about 134 square feet, which then, you know, if you thought of it just as a square, that's a much smaller facade than a 21,600 square footer, which is about 178, I think. So, you know, you're starting now, when you start talking about like this 25% reduction, you are actually talking about a meaningful, noticeable reduction in the facade lengths. So what good does that do us if we have sort of what I'll call hypothetical zoning, if like the floor plates aren't achievable? Well, one of the things stakeholders have said, they said, well, realistically, nobody's actually going to build an office that tall. You run out of FAR before you get there. It's really the residential that's looking for that, and those are going to be smaller floor plates anyway. So then my immediate thought is, well, okay, boy, if we reduce that more than 10%, like if you're already at 13,000 square feet, you know, once you put your elevator shafts and the other things in, like, I don't know if that's even viable. That's why I have a really hard time with this. I don't like to – you guys know me. I want all the data and all the rest of it. I'm annoying that way. And so I don't like to just come up with a number and then be like, I hope this works out, because it really may be crippling. You know, I know the 10% is not going to stop somebody from developing, probably, but I also know it's not going to result in the form, or potentially it may not result in the form that we've talked about.
Thank you. So just my point of view, the 25% does seem somewhat ad hoc. We're throwing up as a number,
mm-hmm.
and certainly given this late in the game for us to throw an ad hoc number, I want to be very careful of. 10% is something we've discussed. We've obviously had some debate.
Can I make a comment?
Please, yeah, please.
So with what Commissioner Lang said, is that the buildings run out of FAR before they get taller, then we can drop it from 600 feet, because it won't do that. It won't get there
Would you like to make an amendment?
Or a motion? Yeah. Did you hear what I said? I thought you'd left the room.
No, I there was a floater in my water. Be careful of the cucumber water.
So I wanted to make a recommendation. If you don't disagree with it, that instead of saying that the non-residential height of 600 feet will probably not be realized, so why have that be the top height?
I honestly don't know. Like, here's a scenario, okay? I'm not going to do the math. I like to do the math, though. Just know that. All right. So let's say we have a site, and we're in the downtown O1. We've got the 600 foot. We've got these 24,000 square foot non-residential floor plates. So 24,000 square feet, it's like 60% of an acre. So you could conceivably have we're not going to call it a project limit, we're going to call it a site. We could conceivably have a site that is large enough that you could build one tower, you know, way up to the sky, like 600 feet, where all of your floor plates up to 345 feet are the full 24,000, and then they become 21,600 above that. But I say, like, in that scenario, the likelihood is your site is so large that if you did that single tower concept that went up 600 feet, that tower would be sitting in such a way that there would be a ton of space around it. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So then is that the end of the world? Like, I've tried to reality test what this is to make sure that I'm not just worried about, you know, nothing. And I just don't know. And I don't like to make ad hoc decisions.
Gilhorst, please, yeah.
So could we make a recommendation that council review a 10 to 25% reduction for tower for the floor plates above the trigger height? And I say that because obviously we haven't had thorough discussion of what an impact of 25, but just give them a range so they can go have that thorough discussion. And just say, because we're comfortable with the 10, but I think we wanted to explore small. So could that be the recommendation?
Yeah, and are you, to clarify, are you most concerned in certain zones and not so much in other zones? We've had most of our discussion about the O1. Mm-hmm. And then also, are you wanting to go beyond 10% for just office buildings? It sounds like you're maybe comfortable with residential buildings that are already more slender, having that 10% reduction. So just, I'm trying to put some caveats on what you're recommending the additional analysis be done on.
Yep, you're right. We've just done the O2. I think that's pretty much the area we just want to look at. I'm comfortable residential. I'm sorry
for interrupting.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, for anything where the intention is it's getting substantially taller and it's getting narrower, then no recommendation to council for a change. We stand with this, like the residential in downtown. But where it's getting taller but it's not getting more narrow, some more analysis needs to be done, regardless of what zone it is. Let's say if the height is going above, what, a 50% increase? Or,
mm-hmm.
So that gives, because I can't check them all right now to see which ones it impacts. But then the intention that the outcome council would come up with is taller, more slender buildings.
So I guess probably would translate that then into the draft code would be where there's added height above, which would be the height above the trigger height, for non-residential would be putting in there in the recommendation a range of 10 to 25%. And then in the transmittal explaining that the thinking behind that and what the intent was.
Yes.
But that was the draft is, at this point is a range for non-residential buildings above the trigger height across the downtown, wherever that additional height had been added. And then on the residential side, I'm not hearing any reduction on that front, given those smaller floor plates.
Yeah.
I would just say, I mean, if you look at the table, there's already a very significant reduction in the size of the residential floor plate that occurs. So it's not there. It's just, it's really the commercial. And I just, again, I ran the math. You'd need about you'd need like 9 acres worth of site in addition to what you've already built to get to 288 feet in the downtown O2 zone. You need an additional 9 acres in order to get to the 460 feet with the full-on, like, 24,000 square foot floor plate. I don't know what kind of, like, assemblages are there. Mr. Bann is shaking his head. Again, like, some of this could be so, you know, we could be spending an awful lot of time here, like, on a problem that just couldn't happen, but I just don't want it to happen.
But I think we have a good recommendation back in terms of our perspective, so perhaps that's what we stick with.
So we'll be looking for a motion on that then, and just to restate to make sure we captured it right, so the direction would be, if one of the council members makes, one of the commissioners makes this motion, would be that in terms of the floor plate reduction associated with higher height, above the trigger height, that it be for non-residential buildings across the downtown where the additional height's being added, a range of 10 to 25% for a floor plate reduction above the trigger height. And then for residential buildings, presumably it would stay the same 10% that's in the current draft.
That's a good summary. Yep.
So yes. That motion.
Nice. Say
so moved.
That's what I want to say. So moved.
Commissioner Walter, so moved it.
Can I just adopt Dan's language? Because
yeah, it's on the record.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I would like to make a motion to it's exactly what Mr. Stroh so articulated.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Stroh.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, we are well over time, so again, I want to get back and be conscious of getting this through. So back to you, Mr. Stroh.
Well, I think the issues that staff had been able to carry forward from previous meetings have been covered. There was one final issue that was raised by Commissioner Lang that hasn't been yet settled. If the commission wants to talk about that, or if Commissioner Lang wants to put a motion on the table, but it had to do with new base height being set at 90% of the new max, as opposed to what's in the current code, which is it would be set at essentially 90% of the existing max height.
I thought he put that in.
Yeah, he got that in.
Yeah. No, he didn't.
I thought he did that earlier.
That
was his friendly amendment.
No, that was the trigger.
Let's ask him.
No. Thank you. So that I appreciate that, and it looks like it's got a chance. So I'm just going to make the motion I started getting into that with your motion, and then Commissioner Barksdale's recommendation or Commissioner Carlson's recommendation, it was all pulled back, and we started over. So that was not on the table.
Can you not make it yet, if you don't mind? That motion for the 90% across. I want to ask staff question on that, and I don't want that to be part of the motion discussion, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Are you sure?
Do you want to ask staff a question about...
Are you going to make a motion?
I am going to make that motion.
Okay, then I need to ask staff a question before, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Thank you. We haven't had... I'm very uncomfortable passing the 90% because we haven't had a thorough discussion about that. So can staff enlighten the commission on that, please?
Just in terms of what that would mean and the thoughts behind that. So if you go back, the recommendation in the original staff recommendation took into account the need to have enough height to use base FAR, recognizing that, in fact, when you increase base FAR, you need more height to be able to actually use that FAR. So in the original proposal, where the heights were being, the FAR was being increased, the new base heights were set at what is currently the maximum heights. So, for example, in the O1 district, the current code has a new base height set at 450 feet, which is as high as you can actually build today. The idea was, as those base FARs increase, to make sure it can be used, that additional height may need to be used to come into play. So a substantial increase across the board is provided in the current code to increase the base heights. The idea of 90% of the new maximum heights is something that actually applies more broadly than the FAR, sort of parallel construction. Because as has been pointed out, there's only a few areas in the downtown where there's additional FAR that's being added under the current code. In the case of height, there are numerous districts in the downtown where additional height would be provided under the current code, under the code in the packet tonight. For example, in the 01, there's no FAR being added, but their height is going from 450 to 600 feet. And likewise, in most of the districts downtown, there's additional height being added. One of the considerations is the council guidance in the principles for downtown incentive zoning, and you know, principle 8 basically talks about ensuring. Just to read it verbatim, it says ensure that participation in the updated incentive systems required for any increases to currently permitted maximum density and/or height. So the idea was that with the additional height, there would be opportunities for more slender buildings, which we've been talking about, additional open space, and some charging for the amenity system to offset some of the impacts of that additional height. So a consideration would be setting it at 90% of the new maximum. For example, in the 01, you'd be able to go at 90% of 600 feet is 540 feet. So you'd be able to go from 450, which would be under the current code in the packet tonight, you'd be able to go from 450 to 540 without any participation in the incentive system. So the question is whether the balance point has been reached there in terms of following through on the intent of what the added height would, all the provisions with the added height. Buildings may decide 540 is just fine. And so there'd be no participation in the incentive system. You go from 450 to 540 with the existing FAR, and you might not see any incentive system added to provide for open space or other amenities that we're hoping to be able to achieve with the added height. So that's the trade-off, and those are some considerations in thinking about what's the right balance point here.
Okay.
Thank you. So back to you.
To summarize, just to make sure that I understood that, the height that we currently proposed in the draft takes into account that this can be built with the proposed FAR, correct? That's the first thing I believe you said.
The base FAR was changed with Planning Commission's work, and so now the base FAR has been set at 90% of the new max, so that in in most districts, I think it's fair to say that there, because most districts, the FAR didn't change. And so you can actually achieve with the old maximum heights, which are now the base heights, you can achieve what are essentially the old maximum FARs, which haven't changed.
Okay.
Are there places where with the new bases you would need additional height in order to, since those bases have been set higher, you would need additional height? And that's actually an analysis that we didn't do that might apply to the OLB. So that analysis we did not do after the commission did the additional change in where the base was set, being the base set at new 90% of the max FAR as opposed to the review we did earlier.
Thank you, Mrs. Stroh. Back to you, Commissioner Lang, if you could make a motion, please.
Yes. So my biggest concern actually is exactly what Mr. Stroh just said there, which is the OLB. Again, we've got this vast disparity with the base building height. It's the exact same thing as a problem as with the trigger height. And so I'm going to – I saw kind of a little bit of a gasp and, like, that look kind of around the table, and I like winning. People, we're going to get tired of winning here. So what I would like to do is make a motion that for the the downtown OLB Central and downtown OLB South, that the base height and trigger height for both non-residential and residential is the same as the trigger height for the additional height for those zones. And that's the easy thing because we've already moved that in. And what that does is it just puts them on the exact same footing, again, as the downtown mixed use. And so they're not having to buy their way up to build the exact same building.
Do we have a second?
Again, I'm sorry.
All right. So again, I move that the base building heights for the downtown OLB Central and the downtown OLB South be the same as the same height as the trigger heights for respectively non-residential and residential in those zones. And for the record, mm-hmm. we have moved it so that non-residential is 115 mm-hmm. feet as the trigger height and the residential is 230 in both of those, which is the exact same as it is in the downtown mixed use.
Yes, I'd second that.
Thank you. Do you have a second? All those in favor say aye.
I'm not seeing a difference. And I'm looking at the table, so I'm maybe not understanding what you're saying.
These were both at 90
yeah.
and 105.
Yeah.
This exact, for the same heights, this is 150 and 230. So we match these up with these, and all
okay.
I'm doing is matching these up with these, which is the exact. I'm just putting them.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I missed the part where this
height you voted before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, so we have a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Well, I believe we have a... Thank you. Thank you very much. I think we have closure there, Sister. Back to you.
Thank you. I think that is the last issue before us tonight before we're ready to move on to going over the outline of the transmittal to the commission. So thank you very much.
If I could just make one... Please, yes, go ahead. Commissioner Morrison. And then Commissioner Lang.
Just want to make sure that we did not vote 90% base height increase, right? Okay, just want to make sure. The other thing that I have on my bullet list and that we haven't spoken about tonight that I'd like to see added to our recommendation to council is the legal ramification of the amenities incentives. On several occasions, we were supposed to have a presentation from staff on that, and because of study session going longer than usual, mm-hmm. that did happen. And I, from reading the draft, I did not see that on there. So if that could be added, so council could take that into account as well.
Thank you.
Please.
And Commissioner Lane?
Right. I'm not clear whether I understood we received a written communication from, I was going to say Mr. Morrison, but from PMF Investments about parking structures in the OLB. And we understood that staff had met with these folks and is amenable to this, but I'm not clear that this has been moved into the draft.
As is it proper for you to do that?
Okay, so
thank you for the reminder.
Yeah, I move that the recommendation in the PMF Investments Downtown Livability Code Amendment May 24, 2017 handout that was given to us by Attorney Ian Morrison this evening be moved into the draft.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 There we go. Thank you.
Mr. Chair Davidoff.
Commissioner Lang,
I know we're about to get to the good part, which is like trying to wrap this thing up, but there is one other part of the code that I feel I didn't mention earlier, and there are some very specific changes that I feel need to be put in place, and that is, this is on page... too many flags. So there's one simple thing I would just point out in the use tables, and I think this is just it's just a little oversight that we had or may have had as a group, and that is about veterinary hospitals and clinics. On page 52 in the use table for resources, it says veterinary clinic and hospital. And I think just to clarify, because there's other stuff in here about hospital, we should put the word animal in there, and you'll understand in a second why it should say animal hospital, because that's, I think, what it intends. But there's a footnote, and I remember a lot of discussion about this on the commission, and this is about boarding, like kennels. And so if you turn to the to page 41, in the culture, entertainment, and recreation stuff, it says boarding or commercial kennels, and there's a footnote 6 which says boarding and commercial kennels are allowed as subordinate uses to veterinary clinic or hospital, which again I think should say animal hospital, meeting the criteria of, you know, this. And there's actually another provision in here that allows for boarding or commercial kennels, and that is in the and this is on page 46. It's footnote 9, which refers back to I believe the table on page 44. But anyway, it says footnote 9 says boarding and commercial kennels are permitted as a subordinate use to pet grooming or pet daycare, meeting the criteria. So like a different use. And all I'm saying is, just so that you don't have to be like me and sort of piece all that together, that very first footnote 6, say in addition to veterinary clinic or hospital or animal hospital, it should also refer to pet grooming or pet daycares. Does that make sense to everybody? We have this general use reference there in the table on page 41. And if I were a person, like an ordinary person reading through here, and I came to that because that's the first table, I would say, oh, I was going to do a pet grooming business, but you can only do kenneling if you've got an animal hospital or whatever, or a veterinary clinic or animal hospital. But actually, you've got two different footnotes, one that allows it as a subordinate use for animal hospitals and veterinary clinics, and another one that allows it for grooming facilities, essentially. So what I think is that first footnote should reference both the veterinary clinic or animal hospital and the pet grooming thing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
So here's my last big change. This is on page 36. And these are limitations on modifications. And this is going to a council departure, basically what the council can do in a development agreement. And this is subsection 2025 D sub 2 sub C, limitations on modification, and C sub Roman numeral 2 or II. It reads right now, development agreements may not be used to depart from FAR bonus values. I believe that it should say shall not be used. May is permissive. This should say shall. And I think that, again, some of the residents will appreciate that. Same thing in the next line, which is Roman numeral 3 or III. It reads, development agreements are not appropriate. Well, that's aspirational. I believe it should say shall not be used for proposals that are capable of being approved in a different way. Right, and what that's really getting at, so people know, is this provision here is a way to keep a property owner or a developer from making an end run around staff to see if they can get four council members to vote for something that they couldn't get the staff to approve. And that's important. Okay. Finally, in subsection 4, or IV, it says development agreements may not be used to vary. It should again say shall not be used to vary the procedural provisions. And why is that important? Well, what if somebody decides to come in for a development agreement and says, we're going to get rid of all the public process involved with the conditional use, and we're just going to do this little deal with the council? So there are significant protections here if we make that mandatory language. Did you guys hear my proposed changes? Do we need a motion on that?
No, I think we're good. Thank you.
Okay.
So two final comments.
Okay.
Stephanie gets one, I get the other one.
Well, I'm not sure this is a comment. This is something I am requesting a change. On page 86, under shared parking, C3AI. It says the reduction is supported by a parking demand analysis performed. Did we not say an independent professional traffic engineer?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, so I'd like to add that. And then under III, I don't know why that's there at all. Because it's one of these three conditions, I think is what it says.
And it says the parking demand analysis can be a similar use or in other jurisdiction. I think it's looking at other places for the parking study. I want it to be on that site in that location.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Walter. I had that one, and that was
I read over
one.
Your shoulder.
I put a downward flag, which means bad.
So I just would like that removed. I think that I still feel really strongly about parking is, and like Commissioner Carlson said, that the old main is just the canary in the mine in terms of parking. I think as downtown builds out, we're going to find out that a lot of people, overflow parking is going into Bellevue Square's parking lot, and that's not sustainable. So I think we need to really focus on having enough parking, because that's going to help with traffic. It's going to help with pedestrian safety. It's going to help with downtown livability. It's going to help with everything.
Thank you. So, and then I'll make one final comment. So, two things for me. One is, again, the Parks and Community Services Board, in terms of their feedback, they serve the council, and I'd like to make sure the council is able to get the feedback directly from them and make sure they have the approval of the Parks Board. Secondly, the Transportation Board. I have tried multiple times to reach out to them to get feedback. We have not gotten feedback. I would like them to give input around traffic to the council and make sure the council gets the validation from the Transportation Commission. So my two points of feedback. With that, back to you, Mr. Stroh.
So I think these points, there are a number of points here, including the point you just made, Chair Davidos, about things that might show up in the transmittal. So the transmittal may make that comment about
trying
to be sure that the Parks Board perspective gets to the council, because this is an issue that of open space that really concerns the commission and the transportation ramifications to hear that direct. So that could be an item also showing up in the transmittal.
Thank you.
Because that's an opportunity for you to make observations and suggestions to the council to go beyond the code itself. There's some other things that we captured tonight that aren't in the summary here because they just came up tonight that would be in the transmittal as well.
Yes.
So just going through my list, make sure I've got them all, the parks impact fees comments, that is here, I think, as well.
Yep, right there.
That relate to the earlier discussion.
Are we going to word that more strongly than it is here?
You mean there?
Yeah, we're looking up above.
Sorry, my neck.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we'll have the opportunity, I think, as the chair and vice chair, to come back and review and edit. I would make a request there as well, by the way. I'd like to have the previous chair also participate in the review, given that this particular initiative spanned multiple chairs. Would like to ask for your help as well.
Okay. Thank you. Sure. Absolutely.
Also tonight, we'll want to flag the issue of this range that we just discussed in terms of the floor plate reduction above the trigger height and comment on that. And then I think Commissioner Morisseau mentioned something that probably belongs in the transmittal about just ensuring we're on solid legal ground in the incentive zoning system. That could also be something that's touched on in the transmittal. So those would be added to the starter list here. These others are earlier comments that came up earlier. In the packet tonight, there's an overall outline of the transmittal. We wanted to give you basically what it would cover. This set of these other recommendations for the council would be also touched on in the transmittal. You've talked earlier about the comprehensive downtown parking study, the accounting system for the in-lieu fees.
I just want to clarify, this is too vague how it's worded. Accounting system, it needs to be fund accounting. The very specific system. It's not somebody creating a spreadsheet. It's a fund accounting system. Your finance director will know exactly what that is.
No,
or you need a new one.
Can I tap onto that?
Yes.
Wasn't there discussion about also potentially putting a timeline on the use of those fees?
Yes. They
just didn't build indefinitely. They actually got applied.
We discussed it, but I don't think we ever put the timeline in of how long. So we need to wrap that up.
Yeah, I just noticed it's not on there, but I remember there was a discussion to make sure that they got used.
That they get used and they don't and accumulate. They don't, right. In some jurisdictions, they, if they're not used by X amount of time, they actually are refunded to the developer, which I don't suggest. But the point is that there is a point in time by which they be used and that there be every incentive to use them by then. And I don't recall what that time was. I would say 5 years.
I want to say five has come into my head for some reason, but I don't.
We can certainly make the point in the memo about making sure that there's timely use of the funds as they accrue.
Yeah, but I would like to put an actual time in. If we're thinking about what we're doing, because so let's say we don't wind up with a park impact fee and we do have a park fund, 5 years, it may take 5 years in order to amass enough money to buy parkland, mm-hmm. but some of the other things we'd want built sooner. So maybe parkland would be 5 years, but maybe the open space type things would be 2 years so that they happen quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would be good with that. Because, right. Yeah, we want to make sure that it's getting used while the residents are there now.
Yes.
And the buildings are going up now. So.
As close to real time as practical. Yeah.
So it's good we have closure there. I do want to jump in and say we will have to spend time anyway to go back and review and edit and wordsmith this.
On the transmittal?
Yes. I certainly don't expect that to happen tonight. And I want to just set the expectations because otherwise we'll be here all night. So
that was my plan.
So I do want to clarify the process in terms of how we might edit, wordsmith, refine over the next few days or the week or so. Maybe you could help us, Mr. Stroh.
Thank you. So our proposal was tonight just take a look at the direction we're headed here, make sure there's nothing big that we've missed, and then if it pleases the commission, have the chair and vice chair, and I just heard also the prior chair review the transmittal on behalf of the whole commission so that we can quickly turn it around, make sure we've covered the right bases.
That would seem to be a reasonable Commissioner Morrisville, yes.
Just a quick question. Will the other commissioners have a chance to take one final look at it after the key players?
Of course.
Okay. Just making sure.
Of course. We'll make sure that, obviously, the final pass will be reviewed by the audience.
Those of us at the card table at Thanksgiving dinner,
Okay.
Very good. I think that concludes the business we're hoping to conduct tonight. So thank you very
much.
Thank
you. Thank you very much. Thank you. So moving on in terms of our agenda, let's see. I think we have meeting minutes. I'm going to recommend, Mr. Cullen, that perhaps we defer this unless you absolutely insist.
Well, he did the last time.
Insisted
or deferred.
Well, it's just your next meeting is going to be a very long public hearing on the Bellevue Technology Center plan.
So you insist.
So, you know,
it's strongly.
And then your next meeting will not, after that, won't be till the end of June. So
yes.
I do want to get some minutes up there for the public to have on record. So if you don't mind taking a few moments, please.
Just to start the process off right then, I move that we approve the April 19, 2017 minutes.
Do we have a second?
I have one correction, very important. Last paragraph, Mr. Stewart Heath, not Steward Heath. And then we can approve it.
With a T.
Excellent.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. There we go.
Motion to approve the April 2016 2017 minutes.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 I think we have that back to you as well, Mr. Cullen.
I know that this is exhausting, but motion to approve the May 10th, 2017 minutes.
I abstain because I was not present for that session.
I abstain as well as I was not present.
Can we leave that one for next?
So defer.
Yes, let's defer that
one. I was there for half the meeting. I'll cast half a vote.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Cullen.
All right. Thank you very much.
So moving on to public comment, I think we had Mr. McCullough have one public comment, I believe so. Please.
Yes.
Thank you for your indulgence.
Jack McCullough, 7016 Fifth Avenue, Suite 6600, 98104. I just wanted to hand something out to you about Unigard.
It's not a rock.
Bellevue, not a rock, Bellevue Technology Campus, comp plan amendment. You have a hearing coming up on the 14th. We've been in discussions with staff about this. I just wanted to take 60 seconds to give you some background. We were here 3 years ago and had a comp plan amendment of a very different type asking to set up a process. And we withdrew after the commission looked at it and said, no, probably not right now. And we were encouraged at that time to go forward with the rezone. So we spent 2.5 years working on a rezone with staff and literally hundreds of thousands of dollars. We got to last winter, and there were issues that came up with traffic analysis and trying to get better answers from the city's traffic model. It was suggested to us that really the better course was to go back and do the comp plan amendment. So that's why we're back in front of you. What we're trying to get is we're just trying to get a chance to be in front of the city council, which we thought the rezone was going to do for us, with the information, address, you know, the issues at hand, and let the council make a decision. So what we've suggested here more recently is, and this is what we'll say on the 14th, is that if you pass us through the first round, you're not endorsing us, you're not saying that there should be a comp plan amendment, that there should be a change, but there's some key areas of information that need to be addressed in order to evaluate it. And we've suggested that they be what public benefits can accompany an amendment. I mean, we've talked about the conservation easement, we brought Forterra in, we brought FutureWise in, talked about saving the trees, doing additional traffic analysis specific to this site. And we're ready to, we've got everybody teed up. We've got two separate traffic consulting firms ready to work with the city to do that at significant cost. And then looking at whether there should be some linkage, some phasing. You know, maybe traffic improvements need to be made out in the neighborhood before anything happens. Happy to look at that too. So we've suggested that one course to take would be to say pass this amendment through to the next round, but add some special conditions to it, to make it clear that there should be some information that comes to council to support. And the council is going to do, and you will see it again too, obviously, if it passes through, you'll see it in the fall, but hopefully with this information. So, and the reason is we're just trying to get our day and, you know, have been denied a couple of times beside nobody's fault, just, so this is our pitch. So I'll let you go. I'll just give you a copy of this. Thank you. I wanted to take a quiet moment to share that.
Thank you. Any other public comment?
Yes, please.
Good evening, everyone. Eric Sen from the Parks Board. I apologize for coming at the late part of the evening. I just wanted to actually come by and again reaffirm our commitment to work in partnership with you. I understand that we actually have an outstanding item that we are working on actively with the Parks Department in regards to the definition of open space. I should note that we did provide a definition, suggested definition for plazas, and the reason that we focused attention on that particular term was the amount of times it actually showed up within the incentive system. I believe 3 or 4 of the 18 incentives that are actually offered to developers use the word plaza. I also noticed with the slide deck that was actually up that drove conversation, plaza was a term used, not open space. And so tactically, we actually focused concentration on that particular term. The other thing that I would like to just, again, thank you all for understanding where the balance lies is that the discussion of park impact fees and associate conversation around it seems to actually understand that basically there is recognize that there is value within parks, whether or not that's basically societal or financial. And the one thing I did want to call into aspect was that there was a definitive example of the financial benefit that parks do bring with us to City of Bellevue, and that was actually in the Bellevue Reporter. Where the Spark apartments within the Spring District were opened. And they referenced directly that the commitment from REI to actually house their headquarters here was based on basically Bellevue's commitment for green space. So there is basically economic impact in actually having parks. So though the discussion of park impact fees and 10%, those particular type of numbers and that type of terminology and definition that's used in the conversations, I would actually ask that you also recognize that parks create value. And so that is just my own personal pitch. Thank you very much. And if there are any actions that I would actually take back to the Parks Board, please let me know. Chair Davidos, Chair Walter, you actually have my direct email. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
I don't see any of the public comments, so do we have a motion
There's
to adjourn?
No public left.
So moved. A second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 It's adjourned.
4 years.
Oh, yeah. I'm really sorry.